Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 30th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386, and our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, which is 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find our banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up in Matthew 18, where we left off last week. So we're in Matthew chapter 18, and we're going to read verses 11 through 20. So Matthew 18, 11 through 20. And Jesus said, "For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doeth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seek that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, truly I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father, which is in heaven, that one of these little ones should perish. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that at the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Truly I say unto you, you whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever ye shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say unto you, that if two or three shall agree on earth as touching anything that thou shalt ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of thee." Matthew chapter 18, verses 11 through 20. Okay, I don't know, Robert, do you have anything, any announcements, or anybody else have any announcements before we move forward?
Yes, I do.
Go right ahead, Robert.
All right. You know, the last week they began getting ready for the trial in Nevada. Today, jury selection began. Now, they have 1,145 people called in to pick a jury from. And my understanding is that one of them that was chosen by the prosecutors today actually had dinner with the DA on this past Friday. Talk about a conflict of interest if they don't boot him out.
Sounds like jury shopping to me.
Yep. And so this is really the true Bundy trial, because it's Cliven, you know, the dad, and the three sons. The four of them are the ones on trial on this one. They expect that this trial may last into February. So I guess they're expecting a whole lot of things happening. But that's where we're at now. They said that they will go with jury selection from now. And if it, you know, they don't want to call people in on Friday, but if they're not done, they will, and they'll continue in on next Monday if they need to. So this is going to be a drawn-out process, probably not a whole lot happening other than jury selection for now. I find it interesting that word is coming out that the police department there in the Vegas area and the prison guards are letting the word out that rules do not apply to them. I think that was probably in reference to the fact that last week they handcuffed Cliven Bundy to a chair and Ammon and Ryan to the wall. And they told Cliven Bundy that if he opened his mouth, that he would get some of the same. And they beat the crap out of Ryan and Bundy. Ryan and Ammon, I mean. And when they were taken into the court, there were, you know, they had abrasions and different marks on them. And the attorneys tried to get it entered into the records of the court. Judge refused to do so. So the attorneys took pictures and everything for evidence. So there's going to be some things popping over that now, too.
Let me ask you, Robert, most of the stuff that you're talking about, is this pretty much most of the stuff you are also eyewitness to, or you're collecting this off of people?
I'm not eyewitness to it. I'm just collecting information from people who are there.
Is there any way to get affidavits on these things? We could do something right now in the court and do a show cause, concerning this whole situation with the, you know, this is outrageous that they are going to cherry pick a jury the way they're doing this. And, this whole process that they use to begin with just really rots. It stinks to high heaven. It's all really evil, the way that they choose the jury, the questions they ask them. And so on. But anyway, see what you could do, because I'd like to see if we can't get a paper in the courts on this.
Well, we do have one of the patriots that's already been through the trial and everything. He lives there in Vegas, and so we're hoping that we can get affidavits through him.
You know, even if we can get the details, if we can't get the affidavits, if we can get the details and names and, information, that we can put enough information together that, it's clear that we've drawn this information from the court, from what happened in the court and whatever other sources we can get it from, at least we can go forward with that, questioning them concerning those things. But affidavit is the key way to go with this. Because, if we do an affidavit directly to the judge is orchestrating this whole thing, right?
Yes, she is.
Okay. We'll do an affidavit to the judge, and if necessary, we'll go through an indictment on that judge.
Yes.
She's got to answer. We can demand that she be removed from this case. And that the jury has already been spoiled. If the DA, and I think this is what you said, the DA had a conversation with an individual who was picked for the jury and had dinner with them, and this person is, what does this person do? Is this person employed by the government or something? Or?
I have no idea who he's employed by. I just got the information that he had dinner with the DA on Friday evening.
Well, that is a problem, and we have to do something here. We have to start going after these people. We've been wanting to do this for a while. We've got everything we need out there to go do something with Lavoie Finnegan, and everybody I hope remembers and knows that we have all of that, a lot of video and information up on our website under, if you go up to our website, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, go under grand jury and come down and click on docket. And we have two packages up there of information on cases that we do intend on, you know, I don't know when we're going to do it, but we do intend on, in the near future, I hope, go forward with some cases. So we have evidence reports. One of them is the grand jury report regarding the criminal investigation into 9/11. And the other one is the grand jury investigation of Lavoy Finnegan homicide. And everyone that is with us here that intends on sitting on that grand jury when we call it together should go up here now and start looking at these two reports. And because there's a lot of information, a lot of videos to watch, and it's going to take some time. We want people who really are looking into this case to make a good decision on whether we're going to indict or not, and then all of this evidence will be brought into the court. We have tremendous amounts of information by very, very credible sources, so I think it's pretty powerful. But anyway, we'd like to do the same thing here with this case. You know, if only we can get these people out there. You know, they've been poisoned, unfortunately, by... goodness, I don't remember the name of those names of those people, but in any event, they were trying to do what we're doing, and they were doing some commercial stuff, and they were, you know, having hearings in the back room or of Denny's, and they created their own judges, and you know, they really went off, really, really off the deep end, and very dangerous stuff, because clearly what they were doing was subversion. But nevertheless, they got a bad taste from those people, and I don't know what they think of us or who we are, what we're doing. But clearly, they don't really understand. If they did, I would think that they would be coming to us, but they're not. But anyways, well, let's see what we can get.
This trial is has worldwide interest. Got information from one of the news outfit in Canada. They wrote an article on the FBI agent that was arrested in connection with the Lavoy Finnegan shooting. And so the people around the world are watching.
Well, you know, this is what we're doing right now with the sheriffs. If this sheriff was to have taken off earlier, and we were able to get education out to the sheriffs, getting constitutional sheriffs, and if the sheriff started to act on these things, a good sheriff out there in this case is taking place in where? Nevada?
Nevada in Pahrump.
Okay.
Nevada. Well, it's right there by Las Vegas.
If we have a good sheriff out there, and if he were to read our book and really ponder on what's being, you know, offered in this book as far as power and authority to the sheriff, I would think we would be having DAs arrested, judges arrested, and individuals on the being chosen for that jury arrested. I believe that would be the case if we can get a sheriff who understands his power and authority and was able to be in position to be able to see what's going on and then go do what he's got to do. But anyway,
well,
there, Robert.
Ollie and I have come to the conclusion that the sheriff there knows what's going on, and he knows that it's wrong, and he's being controlled, and he's not liking it. It seems that if he had a militia or somebody backing him, he might be willing to cause a stink or whatever.
What he needs is a half a dozen or a dozen or more sheriffs. That's what he needs. And this is
he needs that support, because it's clear by the look on his face that he's really troubled by what's happening.
And also the people. We need the people behind him. And I'm hoping that everybody that's hearing this program tonight that is listening in is going to step up when the time comes. We need people to step up. This campaign, we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, but this campaign that we're working on for the sheriffs, we want to tie them in with local people. And the people that are with National Liberty Alliance that is getting educated and understands the problem, we want them to get moving on committees of safety in their neighborhoods and then connect with their sheriffs. There'll be cases where the sheriff may be calling us, hopefully, and looking for contacts, and we're going to want to pass numbers on to them. And before we pass the number on to them, we'll first give you a call and make sure you're going to respond to the sheriff, because we need to connect and we need to get going. We need to get constitutional sheriffs. But anyway, go ahead, finish up, Robert.
Well, that's all I have. It's just Ollie and I have been watching pretty close, and we do think the sheriff knows what is right and everything, but he just doesn't have the backing to be able to do his duty.
He doesn't feel empowered.
He doesn't feel like he has enough backing to.
Right.
You know, he knows that if he steps up, they're gonna take action against him to dismiss him.
Right. Well, first off, we have to. First thing he needs to get is knowledge, and that's what this sheriff's handbook is going to do. Give him knowledge. The second thing he's going to need is to extend his education, pass it on to his deputies, and then connect with other sheriffs nearby and across the nation. It doesn't matter where. Connect with other sheriffs and get to the point where situations like this, as a matter of fact, we talk about situations like this in our sheriff's handbook, whereas, you know, if he's going up against an agency, a federal agency, or even a state agency, and he needs the support, that's where you need 4, 5, 6 sheriffs. I remember a story that Sheriff Mack told once when we met up with him. Goodness, I don't even know if he did this in public or when we were together having lunch. I think he might have done it in public. He told the story. Well, matter of fact, I know he's done it in public. I think it's on tape, as a matter of fact, on video. You get it on YouTube. But Sheriff Mack spoke about bringing all these sheriffs together to throw the feds out of town. Matter of fact, that, I believe, is the case that they ended up bringing to the Supreme Court. Going after, you know, the feds, and they got their ruling that the sheriff is the top cop and he's in charge of the county. He's the chief lawman of the county, period. Nobody above him. And but he spoke and told the story when, you know, when they dealt with the feds, when they had 5, 6, 7 sheriffs in a room talking to the feds and said, get out of town. Sheriffs got up. I mean, the feds got up and they got out of town. It's not that easy when one sheriff is alone. Even with a few of his deputies, he needs 3, 4, 5, 6 or more sheriffs with him. And when they need to be backing each other up in these kind of cases. You know, I could see the faces of these sheriffs when you see them on the video. And they come out and they're making this report and they're talking about all these things. And you know the sheriff is being coerced. You know that they got him under a lot of pressure. And you could see it. You can see it. And if only he had the power and the authority, which he's already got it, but you got to get it into your mind and your heart and get that backbone going to begin with. And then, of course, well, common sense means that you also have to grab a hold of other people that have the same knowledge, the same power, the same authority that will back you up, get behind you, and go out and do what's
going to be done. Well, that's the thing. He knows he's got the power. It's just he doesn't have anybody behind him.
Well, hopefully we're going to help accomplish getting people behind them.
Ollie, I think, has something he needs to put out, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Ollie.
Yes, in regards to affidavits, Brad Thornton is one of the patriots out there. He was out in Bunkerville. He's one of the guys I met while I was out there. He's one of the relation working in the casinos, knows what's going on. Their main concern now is the FBI destroying all the evidence. In fact, another witness was killed over the weekend. He found him dead in an abandoned house. Now, they you know that they're talking like 9/11. After 9/11, all the witnesses were systematically done away with. So we put out a big plea: affidavits, affidavits, affidavits. That in the massacre and also during this trial, we need affidavits, and I think we're making progress. Lauren Pierce, one from Redoubt News, one's interviewed you guys. He put out a post today on affidavits, or the other day, we need affidavits. So we got them thinking affidavits and talking affidavits, and I think we've got them convinced we need affidavits. Hopefully we're going to get some.
And if you think about it, that's a protection for those people. If they do an affidavit and tell the story and sign it and give it to like us and a couple other people, that's their guarantee that they won't bump them off, because it doesn't matter. They can testify from the grave with that affidavit.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it would make it less. Whatever to get rid of them, because it's not going to work. Their testimony will live on.
Right. It'd be too chancy at that point to take them out. All right. Anything else, Ollie?
I could sit here and talk all night about the RFK papers and this and that, but I just wanted to let you know that we're working very seriously again on affidavits, and perhaps, I wish I was out there, but I don't know if I could afford to go out there and vacation or even book and board in Las Vegas. It's
you know, also let people know, if they get us affidavits, if some of them really don't want to be, let them know who wrote that affidavit. As long as it's a sworn affidavit, we will black out the names and then keep the original someplace else.
I didn't know you could do that.
To protect the witnesses. Yeah, the grand jury can do this, of course. We can protect witnesses.
Okay, that I didn't know that. That's good. That's need to know information. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of witnesses are being knocked off, so that might be.
People are afraid out there. They are afraid of the FBI. They are totally afraid of government right now.
Well, this tells us more and more we really have to run hard on this sheriff's program that we got going, because I tell you what, if we can accomplish what we're hoping to accomplish with this sheriff's program, game over for these people. I will tell you, because if the sheriffs can bring themselves together, you know, get their knowledge, get their power, get their authority, understand, grow a good backbone out of this, because now I got something to step on, and then they have the other sheriffs standing with them whenever they need help. They called together the other sheriff. When that happens, that's when this is going to turn around. That's when a sheriff that's being put under pressure, like out there, out west there in Nevada, a sheriff like that under pressure, and you got 10, 20 sheriffs coming to his rescue, that's what we need. And you know what? Forget about just getting to his rescue. Let's start arresting these FBI agents. Let's put them into the county jails. Let's deal with them. Let's arrest the judge. Let's arrest the prosecutor. Let's arrest all these people. Let's go to Washington and arrest all these other clowns in the FBI that just are they're just evil. Just evil.
Questions for Robert. Robert, what did you mean when Vegas Metro said they didn't have rules? Are they trying to distance themselves away from the guards?
No. In fact, it's the guards and the police out there in town. They've let the word out that the rules do not apply to them, that they can do whatever they want.
That's the cops in Pahrump or Vegas?
I believe Pahrump.
Yeah. Well, that sheriff out there, I wouldn't trust her now either. At first I thought she was all right, but she turned into a ding-a-ling too.
But they, you know, after the beating of the Bundy boys, and people started raising hell about it, that's when they started letting the word out that rules do not apply to them.
That's for good reason for us to send paperwork on that, because the Constitution applies to them. And
yes.
when we send paperwork in addressing that, you're going to see how quick they snap to attention. I yield.
Okay, if you guys, are you guys done?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so mute yourselves up. We're going to get going with our program now. Like I said, we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sheriff's book that we just put out. And then we're going to go into maybe 20 minutes of an open forum on that to get ideas, thoughts, opinions, things we might have missed in there that we should have. You know, the very first five or so pages, not including the front page, but the front page is important too. There needs to be something that draws them. So we have a nice front page on the, over the booklet. We also have a good index. I think it's a two-page index. We're going to add to that index, but break it down so these people, the sheriffs, have a very easy time to find all this information. Gerard, see if you can mute yourself.
I just wanted to tell them where they can find it. I mean, you got it posted, right?
Yeah, it's on the front page. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org, right on the front page.
Okay,
click on that welcome page. Click on the, just go on the front page. It's one of the first things you see. It says, read Sheriff's Handbook Draft. Now, it's a draft copy. Once Jen, can get back to working with us, hopefully soon, we'll finish perfecting, the grammar in there. And then we may add things, and people may come up with ideas and things we need to add. So nobody should try to correct the grammar or anything, because that's being done. That's already been done, as a matter of fact. I haven't gone through it with Jen yet. So we'll repost it as soon as we have the perfected one, and then we'll no longer call it the draft. We'll just call it the Read Sheriff's the Handbook, period. And if anybody finds any grammar, punctuation problems or anything at that point in time, get it to Jan's attention right away, and then we'll get that fixed before we go out to print. But I want to get this out to get a final quote on this handbook, hopefully this week sometime if possible, and then start the campaign. So I know Carl has been tied up with some things and some personal things, but hopefully. I'll be meeting with him soon in the next few days and get the website finished off to where I can start to build it. I know I can get the website built by the weekend, completely built by the weekend, as far as content is concerned. All the technical stuff, that's going to be up to Carl. And I think I'm pretty much there. I need just some access to the site from another perspective than just going through the program itself. But anyway, that's just technical stuff. But that should be up and going soon. So I'm kind of hoping by next Monday we're going to have a website up. We're going to start advertising our campaign. I believe we're going to call this Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. That's what we're going to call this campaign. Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. The website will be powerofthecountysheriff.com.net.org. Primarily it's .org, but we got all three, net, com, and org, so anyone you put in there will get you to the same place. But you'll find that it always goes to .org. So powerofthecountysheriff.org. Again, it's under construction. If you go out there right now, it's nothing to talk about. It's just something under construction. But Lord willing, this week we'll get it done. Now, this is one of the things I wanted to make sure that I accomplished, and I think I did accomplish this. Being the main author of this book, we need others, our people looking at this and say, yeah, you did accomplish it, or maybe we should add this or add that to make sure that we do accomplish this. What I really want to accomplish is to grab these people in the first four or five pages. So we have the preface or the preface. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm going to just say preface. So we have the preface up there, and if you go out and look at that preface, let me see how many pages the preface actually is. The handbook, the cover is one, and then two pages for index, and then we move into the preface. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages of the preface. Okay, in those five pages, we really wanted to grab hold of the sheriffs, to catch their attention. I think we've done it, and again, we need your comments and thoughts and ideas also, and because that's the most important thing. We wanted to create a handbook. To some degree, it's a long book. Right now, we have what you're seeing here is 74 pages, but we really have like 83 or 84 pages. We added some more stuff since we posted this one. We put a page and a half just on due process. I realized that we had forgotten really. We have due process in there, from a couple of different angles, but I really wanted to get something really focused on what exactly, what exactly a sheriff really needs to know and understand about due process. You know, when he's in a courtroom or his deputy's in the courtroom, they should be able to recognize the fact that due process is being violated. And so I really wanted to cover that base. The other thing is to prevent all of these unconstitutional warrants from being served. I don't know that I've ever seen a warrant that was done right. I just, you know, hey, I'm sure there's plenty out there. I hope there are, but all the ones that I've seen, they're not there. A lot of them don't have the wet ink signature. They'll have a stamp instead. That's not acceptable. It must be a wet ink signature from that judge himself. We don't want some secretary or some legalese individual to be stamping the paper. No, we want that judge's John Hancock on there. The other thing is the on a warrant, you have to have a sworn affidavit. You have to have an oath, okay? And so if they're going to be looking in your house because they want to get into your house to see, you got to have an oath, someone swearing that they have knowledge that this is in there. Or somehow someone swearing to certain things that fit together that makes it clear, yeah, there's something in there. We need to get to it, whatever that may be. I don't ever see that either. You know, where is the sworn oaths? Where are the affidavits? You know, I was in that apartment 2 weeks ago, and I saw this and I saw that. Yeah, it was right in there. Or the person you were looking for was in that apartment. Yeah, I saw that. You see, there you got it. Now, that has to be sworn to. Can't just take the words. That person has got to put it down. They got to swear to it. Now you got the oath, and then you need the warrant. Now you got cause. You know, you can now the judge can now sign that warrant, and it could be executed by the sheriff. But the sheriff is not to execute that warrant if those two things are not there. Okay, I think we made it clear. So we expounded on due process. That of course is part of due process. So we expounded on due process, a page and a half, particularly focused in at least a page and a half, I think it was. You know, and again, you know, we were very specific about the IRS. Okay, when the IRS comes out, they have an affidavit form called Proof of Claim. I believe it's Form 56, Proof of Claim. And it's an affidavit form that must be filled out by the individual saying that this money is owed and has to be sworn to. They can never do that. Whenever the IRS have come out after me, because they could never get anything really on me, so one way or another they found a way to. One time they broke into my bank accounts, and they got, they were able to see how much money was in there or how much money had flown through over a period of time, and they claim all of that is tax. All of that, that's the number that they take. This is tax. You owe us all this money because it's tax. Never mind the fact that it's got overhead involved also. You know, you go out and build a house or something, you don't magically go out there and say some words over the land and the house erects itself and you don't have to buy no materials or anything, it all just comes together. But then they go out with this ridiculous amount. Everybody that the IRS goes out after, they pump up the numbers. And that's why you have these these different groups out there, I don't know what you call them, but I guess they're lawyers or accountants. I guess they're accountants. And they say, hey, you got an IRS problem, give us a call. And they get a guy that owed $100,000 or something, and they got it down to $5,000. That's because they pump it up to begin with. And they're part of the game to get the people back into the game to pay the taxes on and open their books and reveal what it is that they're doing. But look, if the IRS comes to seize property, to file a lien in the county clerk, okay, the sheriff has to have knowledge of that. Definitely the sheriff has to be part of the taking the money, and he doesn't even get part of the taking the money out of the banks. I know when they tried to freeze my money up some years back, they were just going through the process of notifying the bank. The bank had so many days, 3 days, and then they have to ship the money out and, you know, shut up the bank account. And what I did was I sued the sheriff, I sued the clerk, I sued everybody, you know, the agents, everybody. And it just froze. Nobody could touch the money then, you see. And then I was able to take it to court and deal with it. But a lot of people don't know these things. They don't know how it works, and they don't know what they can do to stop it. And, but the IRS, in order to put any kind of a warrant out, they have to have a judge, okay, that's going to sign that warrant. because you can't take my money out of my bank without a judge's signature on a warrant. You got to have an affidavit. And in this case, it's in, with the IRS, it's called Proof of Claim, Form 56. There's another one, 4490, which is, I think that's the one that's fiduciary authority, and the 56 is, I'm pretty sure, the proof of claim. So they have to have that proof of claim, okay? When we get into court, they better have the fiduciary authority, because you say that's the other side of that coin. They need to have two sworn affidavits, one taking authority, a fiduciary authority, and the other one taking approving proof of claim. Those things are not there. That sheriff needs to understand that that is an invalid, unconstitutional warrant. It cannot be executed. And you know what? They can never execute it. We also talked about these non-judicial foreclosures, okay? Non-judicial foreclosures. I mean, the words in itself tells you it's a foreclosure without going through a judicial process. I mean, clear as day, that is a violation of an individual's unalienable right of due process. They have their right for their day in court. They're not getting it. The sheriff needs to understand that. Do you know, if the sheriff understands that, you will not see a tax foreclosure, because they can't foreclose on taxes. They just don't have that power and authority. They don't have the statutory process. They don't have it. It's not there. So they cannot foreclose on taxes no more, and they cannot foreclose on mortgages. Mortgage companies cannot foreclose, because they don't own the paper to begin with, and the paper isn't what people think it is. They think that that's a debt. It's not really a debt. That paper was just an agreement to remove money from the Federal Reserve, from your SESQ account. And all they moved was digits back and forth. That's all they did, is move digits around. And the bank got their money when the closure. Remember, everybody comes in with their checkbook, and you got to write them, you know, to the whoever wrote the mortgage out, and the bank institution that's doing it, and then of course they get their money up front, maybe a point or two, whatever it is, I don't know, and then the money comes out of the Federal Reserve through the window, Fed window, and again it's in digits, it's SESQ accounts. And then they take it and they keep getting paid. The banks start to get paid off on all this. Now, of course, everybody gets their share, because the whole thing is a con job. Everybody gets their share. The Federal Reserve gets a piece of that action every time they collect money. You know, everybody, the bank gets money, the mortgage companies get money, the Federal Reserve gets money, and other individuals, I'm sure, you know, a lot more that I don't even know about. But it's just a big, frenzy. Over just, you know, stealing money from the people, okay? But if sheriffs understand, you can't take a person's property without them going through due process. This is not due process. Go get a court order, and let's get due process through that process, and then I'll take it from you. If he stopped that from going on, you're not going to see foreclosures no more. You're not going to see tax foreclosures no more. Same thing with the IRS. You're not going to see these problems no more. The sheriff can stop all this stuff. And let's look at what's going on out there in out west now with the Bundys. Okay, that sheriff is in trouble. Okay, we heard he's not happy with the pressure, and he's being silenced and prevented from doing things. I'm sure they're threatening his life and his family's life, and so on and so forth. I mean, this is how they operate. Let's get 20 sheriffs out there, and let's get kicking butt. Let's go arrest some people. But it's not going to happen until they come together. Somehow they got to come together, and that is the project that we want to get going. That is what we want to express on our website. This is their website. No one's going to run this website. No one's going to be a voice for this website. The sheriffs themselves will be. If there's going to be a voice, they can elect someone every 6 months or every year or whenever they please and call them a president and be the voice for the association, which is a national association. But he would only represent the whole, not himself, not the minimum, but the maximum. Okay? But I don't even see a need for that, to be honest with you. I see sheriffs needing to really communicating with each other and getting together and realizing, okay, you need me, I'll be there. Yeah, you need me, and I'll be there. They need to get into that agreement. They need to get talking. We're going to give them a place to talk, and without any interference from anybody else other than sheriffs. And we need to give them an education. Someone told me that the book we wrote is too long, and I thought about that. I don't think it's too long. The full Constitution is in here, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights, and the rest of the amendments. So that takes up quite a bit of space, and we do just commenting on that, but that takes a lot of space, and we wanted to get it all in one book, okay? But it is a lot of stuff on the one hand, but this is their job. This is the minimum that they need to understand. This booklet is the minimum of what every sheriff and deputy needs to understand. Let me repeat that. This book is the minimum for every sheriff and every deputy to understand. If they don't understand these things in this book, then is someone talking?
Yeah, I was going to say one of the most powerful things that you reveal in that book, and if the sheriffs would just do it, it would make a huge, huge difference. If they wouldn't enforce a warrant that didn't have a grand jury indictment behind it, because I'll bet you 90-something percent of what they do never has a grand jury indictment.
So that's right, and we make that clear in the book.
Right, so if they just did that, that would put such a serious dent into the course. That alone, if they could get together and say, we're not going to enforce anything with no grand jury indictments, do you realize the monkey wrench that would throw into their system?
All of these Nisi Priest courts would close down in 6 months. They wouldn't even be able to get their tickets through there. They'd close down in 6 months.
That's what
we need.
That single thing is probably one of the most powerful things that's revealed in that book. I just wanted
And it's all minimum stuff. Look, it's fascinating. I'm looking at all the things that I'm involved with here that we've put together over the years, I find fascinating, intriguing, interesting, empowering. And it's like, give me more. I want to eat more. I want more food, you know. And that's where the sheriff should be. And we make the point very clear. You know, if he's going to depend on a prosecutor to do his job, then why don't you just give him your badge and let him take the oath for you, because we don't need you. You got the prosecutor there, and he's not going to do what he has to do because he's one of them. He's part of the establishment, you know? You have all these lawyers involved in this whole process. Everything in this court is all lawyers. They control the sheriff. They control the grand jury. They control the trial jury. They control everything. Let's look what's going on out there in Nevada. Let's see what went on out there in Oregon. It's so clear, and it's in our face. And we can't do nothing. Why? Because we are not unified. We're not united. Look, I've heard this since I was a kid. United we will stand, and divided we will fall. And that's a fact. And we need to realize that. The sheriffs need to realize that. And they need to really understand what's really going on. This book also is very careful not to get into conspiracy theories, not to get off into the man on the land stuff. We're sticking purely on the words of our founding fathers, purely on the words of the United States Supreme Court, purely on the words that coming out of the American jurisprudence, sticking right to Black's Law. Okay, we're very, very careful to not let them to be able to say, you know, the enemy say, you know, these people are a bunch of crackpots, or they're these sovereign citizen people, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Okay? The book is written very carefully to make sure we don't get into that. But you know what the book does? Is any sheriff that reads this book through, he's going to be perplexed, because everything he thought was right is wrong. Well, everything he thought was reality is now fiction. And he's got to deal with that. And you know what? We all had to deal with that. We didn't have anyone holding our hand to deal with that. Those of us who have woken up, we've hit that brick wall, and we've come to realize, oh, something is wrong here. And how do you fix this problem? What's going on? So you start digging on your own. And you know what? If they come up onto our website and take our courses, they're going to get all the Griffin documentaries. We must have about 20 of them up there. That's all part of our course, 120 hours of video and audio on the civics course. And it's going to explain to them. They'll watch these documentaries. It was just so well done. They're impeccable. You know, anybody who's seen them, you know. They're impeccable. Well done. They don't get into craziness. Very sober-minded. Very matter-of-fact. Great witnesses. Individuals from within our government bearing witness. And, I mean, just everything is right there. And if they go through that civics course, That's the thing that's going to snap. That they're going to say, I always knew there was something wrong. Now I see it. And what really ties this whole thing together is the Norman Dodd interview. It's only about, 53 minutes long, but it seems like it's a lot longer than that. Guy talks very slowly, but he says so much and so little. And he reveals, it's definitely the missing link, the missing key, the missing piece that ties this whole thing together, and you say, now I understand. So if anybody who's watched the Griffin documentaries and saw most of them, and then when you see it, if you haven't seen the Norman Dodd interview, you need to see that one, because that is the linchpin. That is the one that ties it all together. And then you say, now I see, now I understand. I know what's going on here now. We have to have sheriffs have their own moments, Helen Keller moment. They have to have their own epiphanies. And there's nothing better than figuring this thing out yourself. So we don't want to push them in that area. We don't want to drive anything crazy. And anybody that's dealing with the sheriffs, once we get the committees of safeties going, stick to business. Stay away from any of these conspiracy theories or any of these other things, which we know these are not really, most of these are not conspiracy theories. But nevertheless, leave them alone. Let's get educated through these documentaries. If you want to educate the group, get these documentaries. You can pull them right off of YouTube, download them, and shoot them up on a screen, and you have all people together watching these groups. So just get them out to the website to watch the, to do the our civics course. They'll get it all in there and more, and a lot more. They'll get American history. They'll get a couple of courses on the Constitution. They'll get common law courses, lectures. They'll get, all of these documentaries and many, many other things. And we don't need to talk about them once we understand them. Let's get down to business. Let's use the words that we can use, which we should be using, and the words that are in our Constitution, the words that come from the heart, which is common law. Let's use that, and let's fix the problem. And let's get rid of this disease. But the sheriffs can do it. So, again, we're going to call this Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs, and we need to get everywhere. I'd like someone that maybe that could volunteer, one or two people or one person. One person should be able to handle this, but maybe a couple people working together, maybe a little committee or something. I don't know. I've been on a lot of radio programs over the years, many of them. I'm going to go look up a lot of them and kind of get them out and maybe call some of these people up and try to book another more interviews. A lot of these people have asked numerous times, and I've been too busy recently to go on the radios. But we did a radio program recently with Brent, and I don't know if Jan got it up yet or not. But I've been invited on another one or two, actually three of them. There's three of them I got to get going on to. But what we need to do is really get out there. We need to get a little committee to go out there and find radio programs, whether they're internet radio programs or on the regular on-the-air radio programs, that talk about the subject matters that we're interested in, and make a connection with these people to get National Liberty Alliance on there for the half hour, hour, or 2 hours, or whatever they're offering us. I know we will excite them as soon as we do the interview. I know that they'll want us back after we do the interview. This has been the way it's been for years now. We've been on a number of radio stations over and over again. But again, recently we haven't been on many at all because just too busy. I just haven't been able to do it. But I'm going to have to make the time, and Gerard and I will get onto these stations, and we need to be pushing this campaign for constitutional sheriffs. We need as many people as possible to volunteer. Get a hold of Jan. Now, Jan, like I said, he's taking care of personal business, but you can leave a message on his machine or just wait till the end of the week. Wait till he's back. But get a hold of Jan and let him know that you want to help. We need people to make phone calls. We have over 6,000 members, and we need to call every one of our members up and see if we can't get them into the game. Get out there and put $5 into the game. If we got 6,000 members, and then 5 times 6 is 30, okay, that's $30,000 if we can get $5 on an average across the board. That's $30,000. I'm running an estimate right now. I think my estimate is somewhere between $60,000 and $70,000 in order to do the project for Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. The plan, of course, is to mail out 20 booklets, 20 handbooks to every sheriff in America, whether they're elected or not. There's sheriffs that aren't elected. We need it in the hands of the ones that aren't elected. And we need to, the ones that aren't elected, we're going to put a special letter in there to those sheriffs to let them know, you guys should be elected. This never should have happened. We want to work with you guys to bring the elections back. Okay, what say you? And try to get them to connect. But in any event, we want to get 20 books in the hands of every single sheriff in America. And we also, I think that's going to, we figured that to be about 60,000 books, 63,000 books. We want to order about 80,000. And by ordering 80,000, it puts us as the lowest number to pay for booklets, so it makes it a little cheaper on the one hand. But it gives us the extra books we're going to need to give to sheriffs that will call up and say, hey, I need 10 more, I need 5 more, I need 20 more. We can get them those extra books. I think most sheriff offices in a lot of the counties, 20 books will probably suffice. But I'm sure there are a lot where they won't. And we want to get these books out. Also, if we can get the money flowing and stuff, we'll order another 80,000 and we'll start selling them for a very low price. I want to rewrite the Jurist Handbook. And I know we can put together a better, more organized Jurist Handbook. I've got a lot of ideas on what we can do with that. So I'd like to get that back into the game also. But the Sheriff's Handbooks is really an education for anybody. It's not just the sheriff. Everybody should know the law. Everybody should know due process. This is for everybody. And so everybody should have a book. Maybe we'll create a book, handbook for we the people, you know? And let's really focus in on who we the people are, by what authority. Where does authority come from? You know, we'll write a booklet for that too. I mean, we've got all the material already done. We just have to kind of, focus it towards this group or focus it towards that group or another group and to get these different handbooks out there and sell them for as minimum as possible. Of course, you know, we got to cover the cost of the books. We got to cover the cost of the packaging and the shipping. But we also have to order more, and we have to also support the process. This is a pretty big job. We've done this before, the sheriff, but it was envelopes. Now we want to send books. And so we have to package this, and, so we may have to pay some people to actually do the packaging for us. We're going to see how that goes, but it's a lot of work to put these packages together, the labels, and get it into the mail and move them out. But we want to move them out. If we can get a few people with some deep pockets, you know, I know that you're out there. There's people out there with a lot of money, and that could reach in their pocket and throw us $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, maybe even the whole thing, $60,000, $70,000, because this is that important, you know. So anybody out there with some really deep pockets that really has some money and you realize that you need to do good in this world and you're looking for a place to do that good, well, right here, this is it. Let's save America with the sheriffs. Now, we're not going to, we're working on the political process, which we did the committee man thing. We're doing the committees of safety, which will morph back into the committee man thing. And we're going to be very, very heavily involved at some point in time back on the political process without the politicking, okay? Just the political process, teaching people how the process should work and everything they need to know and understand on the political side. And, of course, we're going to continue on the judicial side and work towards the administrators in every single county. You know, every county needs to have at least 4 minimum administrators for the courts to pull together and to orientate, to pull together, make sure the grand juries and the trial juries, make sure they're not tainted. Don't let that judge get a hold of them, because we're going to call the sheriff and say, I'll give you a written affidavit. He broke the law. This is what he did. He's tainting the jury, you know. We got to stop it. We got to fix it. And we've got the solution. And we're coming from 3 different angles. We're coming from the political, we're coming from the judicial, and we're coming from enforcement. With those 3 together, we can take back America. But the most important one, I think, right now, of course, what we're doing with the grand jury and the reporting of the papers, we're going to continue that. Nothing's going to slow that down. But what is most important right now at this point in time, in my opinion, is this Sheriff's Project, Campaign for Constitutional Sheriff, because this is the thing that has the potential to turn this nation around in a heartbeat. Also, this is the potential. Get sheriffs to work with us, with the grand jury, slam dunk done. Sheriff can take it, hand deliver it to the court, say, I got an indictment, let's take it through. Slam dunk, done, okay? So this is an extremely important campaign. You know, we always knew that an educated sheriff is important, but we probably should have really done more on education up front and should be further along than we are now. But on the other hand, everything is in its own timing. You know, this isn't my timing. Ultimately, it's God's timing. So, and you know what? If we did this 6 months ago or a year ago, I don't think we could have done as good a job as we've done on the Sheriff's Handbook. I don't think we would have had the knowledge of certain things and the realization of what they need to really understand. I know when we did the Jurist Handbook, we had a reasonably good understanding, but there are things missing from there. I know that now. So again, you know, I think the timing is right. You know, all the ducks are in a row. Everything is ready to rock. Now it's just a matter of pushing it out. But we need to move this quickly. If it moves slowly, and it takes a while, and we get $10,000 up, and it's just moving slowly, and it's not moving fast enough to be able to order $80,000 in one shot, which is going to be somewhere around between $30,000 and $40,000 to order all these booklets, okay? If we can't order $80,000 in one shot, we're going to have to order maybe $20,000. But the price of the booklets will be 1.5 times more. I have to look at it, maybe even more, maybe even 1.1 and 2/3 more. I don't know. But it definitely be a lot more. It's a lot more expensive. The more you order, the less it is. So 80,000 is that really good number. And it gives us plenty of extra books to get the job done and extra books to really deal with sheriffs who want more. So if it moves slowly, and we're going to write this up on the website, how we're going to handle this, and we're going to show you the cost, the proposals we have on the handbooks, what the actual costs are and everything. But if it moves slowly and it takes us a while to get that $10,000, then we're going to move forward and order minimum amount of books and continue to move forward. So as money's coming in, the books get here, we'll start shipping them out and wait till we get another $10,000 and order another group of books and so on. We want to get this project moving, but the ideal thing is to hit the ground hard and do it in one shot. If let's say we can collect enough money to do this entire project in, let's say, 30 days or less, okay? In less than two months, we will have 20 handbooks in the hands of every single sheriff in America. That we can accomplish in 60 days if we can get the money in 30 days. We're going through the process now of getting the handbook ready and getting it typed up, get the printer, work it up, and get it ready for print. And then when we say go and we have some money, we'll ship him some money and then he'll start printing. But everything's being prepared now. So that will move along quickly. It's going to take 2-3 weeks to get that going where we get something we really want and complete it and ready to go to print. So we're ahead of the game on that one. Once we say go, it takes 2 weeks for them to print, dry, and mail, and then ship them. So it'll take 2 to 3 weeks to actually get the books once we say, here's the check, here's the money. When we pay for this, last time we did it, we had to have 50% up front, which we send them a check for 50% of the costs, and then we have to send them the rest of it when they're ready to ship. And then we also had to pay for shipping. I know last time, I forget how many booklets we ran, quite a bit though, 50,000, something like that, I don't remember. But it came on pallets, took up a lot of space in my garage, but it came in pallets. And it cost something like $3,000 and change, almost $4,000 in shipping for 50,000 books. So we're figuring $4,000 to $5,000 for shipping all of these pallets, for books to get them here. And then we got to package them and ship them out. But anyway, if we could do something really great and get the money quickly in 30 days, 60 days, we can have in every sheriff's hands all these handbooks. Let me see where I want to go from here. Before we open up for questions. All right, well, anyway, that's the big thing. We need to get the... Oh, here it is, yes. Remember, we have a membership of over 60,000. Now, I spoke with someone recently, and they had joined us up about a year ago, and they were very impressed and kind of interested in what we're doing. They've just been busy in life, and, you know, they got to get back out, so on and so forth. These are the people we want to spark back up again. We want to get them excited. We want to get them to understand what we're doing and to get back into the game. We do have some people who have joined us up and joined up with us and then don't even remember that they joined, you know. And sometimes it takes a little while before they say, oh, yeah, now I remember. Yeah, that was a good site. Yeah, I remember that. You know, so there are people that kind of forgot, you know, and who we are that's in our membership. We got to call all these people up and re-spark, rekindle them. We got to get them to move and see and understand, and we're going to create a dialogue, you know, something that you would make a phone call on, spend a minute or two, and move on to the next phone call. So we're looking for something very short, but we want to make sure they get enough information to really understand what it is, who we are and what it is we're doing, and kind of make them bring their memory back to, yeah, I remember joining NLA, for those who have kind of disconnected themselves. And we want to get them out to the website to see and read the book and see the plan and make a donation. That's the key, is getting that donation so we can buy these books. So we're going to work off, it should be considered a warm call. These are not cold calls, these are warm calls. These are calls of people that have already showed an interest in what we're doing. They're members. We need to call them. So we need as many volunteers as possible to help us with those phone calls. Even if you can only do 10 a week, if you can say, I can give 20 minutes, I can give 10 phone calls, two-minute phone calls, that's all they are, two-minute phone calls. I can make 10 calls this week. Get those 10 calls accomplished. Let it be known to the leadership of that committee. I got these 10 calls. You check them off, and then we'll follow up with an email to these people, and then we'll give you 10 more for the next week. Some people could do 20 a week. Look, at some people could do 100, 200, 300 a week because maybe they're retired. Or they're disabled and they have plenty of time to do this. They'd be anxious and exciting to do this. So whatever it takes, we got to get this out. We also have to move to the next level. You know, we need to be on the radio more. So we need to get that committee going, get us onto the radio. If we can get on the radio 2-3 times a week, that'd be great. Get the word out through that, get people excited, get them out to the site, get them to donate, and get them involved, and get ready to connect with the sheriffs, because that's what we're going to do. We're going to connect the people to the sheriffs directly. And so we then move down the line. We go to the Liberty groups. We all belong to a Liberty group. Most of us do anyway, or we know. We've gone to some of the meetings. You know, we hear about the meetings from time to time. Let's get to the Liberty groups. Let's get this message out to them. Let's get this campaign for constitutional sheriffs moving across the nation. And again, we're going to put out, you know, a very clear-cut kind of a dialogue that you would talk with the people about on the phone. And also, we'll be very concise, as short as we can, but very concise on the website on what our plan is and what we're looking to do. Most of that is already written up already. We've been working on that for weeks now. All of that is written up. We do have some more writing to do, but again, we can accomplish all that in a week. We have to get this program going. We've got to accomplish the goal, and quicker and sooner than later. I'd like to say, let's shoot for the 30-day plan. If we can't accomplish it, fine. We'll go with the $10,000 plan, and every $10,000 we'll order more and move along. But we have to get moving. And again, anybody out there, anybody that really got some dollars, that could afford to drop $10,000 or $50,000 into something like this, you know, let's do it. Let's get this job done. We've been surviving off the widow's mite, the $5. You know, some people give 10, some 20, a couple of 50, and a few 100, but generally it's $5. That's what most people give. And we're good with that because that's what keeps us going, the widow's mite. So let's get this going, though, And you know, these donations, you know, we're going to do something. We're going to set up membership on the sheriff's site. Every member of National Liberty Alliance should become a member on the sheriff's site once we get that set up. We're going to request. We're not going to require for sure, but we're going to tell people, you know, if you're not a sheriff or any sheriff or deputy or anybody in law enforcement or active military, they can sign up and for free and move right on. For those who will be honorary members, we're not in law enforcement, we're not in active military, so we'll do $5 a month for that membership. But we will also allow people to choose more if they want to give $10 a month, $20 a month, $50, whatever it is. It's all going to go for this project. And for those who can't afford to do anything, we'll give them a way to bypass to come in without paying anything a month. You know, there are people that are on very, very low incomes, the Social Security, and just barely making it through, and $5 is a burden to them. I know it is to some people because I know people, and I've been there before. So $5 could be a burden. So we don't want to cut those people out, so we'll allow people to come in as an honorary member without paying. If they can't afford it, fine. We're good with it. But if everybody throws in $5 a month, $10, $20, whatever it is, fine. We'll also have the another place for donation, and you come in at the $5 a month, and maybe you can throw $100 in here, and occasionally $20 later on, and maybe 3 weeks, $50, or $5 more, or whatever. Okay? We need to get this project moving, off the ground, and going. This is the project that can save America pretty darn quick. This is the project that can really catapult National Liberty Alliance to the point where the grand jury process moves through and we get that critical mass. This potential is there now from another perspective now, from the sheriffs, okay? The sheriff, you know, look, at we have somewhat of a relationship with the president, and there's a potential, if he does certain things, that he could catapult us into critical mass. That's a possibility. Just people coming into the site, at some point, we can hit critical mass. Okay? So there's a couple of ways. And now there's the sheriff. This can cause critical mass. Okay? An indictment to push through and actually a trial starting, that can cause critical mass. So we got a lot of things going on the burners, so to speak. Any one of them can cause critical mass. And we're waiting for critical mass. We don't know when that's going to happen. But critical mass is the key to our success. We hit critical mass, game over, we win. We're going to take back this nation through the courts. Okay, I guess that's pretty much all I have to say. I know it was a lot longer than I thought, but this is an important project we're on right now, and we all need to be focusing and putting our attention. So now I'm going to open the mics up. I'm going to ask people, there's a couple of people in the queue, anybody wants to get into the queue, *6, only questions concerning or ideas or thoughts concerning the Sheriff's Handbook. Any other questions, come back in later. We don't want to talk about anything else but the Sheriff's Handbook right now. And hopefully in a very short while, we'll move over to Brent. By the way, Robert or Gerard, do you see Brent in here? Is he in anywhere in here? Just keep an eye for him, and if we have to unmute him, we'll unmute him. But let's take our first caller. We have Richard. Go right ahead, Richard. You got the mic.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
All right, fine. First time I've actually queued in, I've only listened to about three of these. You mentioned the sheriff. Now, I had written a correspondence to your office back on July 31st of 16 with some questions. Why not? Never received a response. When it comes to the sheriff, recently we had like a little celebration out of Silverdale. I'm calling from Washington State. But I had an occasion to speak to the sheriff shortly over the phone and was asking why he was allowing State Patrol to use POV-plated vehicles, unmarked vehicles, pull new traffic stops, because that's supposed to be unlawful. It's also quite dangerous. And he said they have an agreement to do that. And I explained to him that he was supposed to be ensuring the individual rights of the people in this county. not the state. The state has no rights. The state doesn't exist without the sovereigns that are in the landmass. I know they don't like that particular term. But in any case, I had asked him about his writ mandamus, if he had received one. He claims that he had not. So more recently, in a correspondence, I advised your office of that fact and requested that he be sent a copy, he be served with a copy of the writ mandamus and the writ quo warranto. Heard nothing back about it. Also said I wanted some acknowledgement that he had been served, because he claims that he had not yet been served. Can that be done?
Yeah, I was muted. Let me respond to that. Yeah, what you got to understand here, you know, I'm only one person here. We have volunteers. Everybody doing work here is a volunteer. Matter of fact, I meant to mention this earlier on. A lot of people have been trying to get me for the last couple of weeks. I see people have been phone calling, and I've ignored every one of them. Occasionally, I have to pick up on, in the leadership, I got to pick up on those calls. But generally speaking, other than leadership, I have been ignoring all calls. I get letters all the time. I get stacks of paper. Literally, sometimes I'll get things 3-4 inches thick, packages, and it's all paperwork. And there's no way I can go through all this stuff. I get so much email, I have to dump a lot. At some point, I just got to dump. What happens is some of this work that starts to pile up, and next thing you know, the papers pile, and I'm never going to be able to get to it. So we don't have the staff to do those things. You know, when we get to the future, because we do have plans on how we're going to work jobs out of this process as far as being here as National Liberty Alliance to advise people and be here for education and so on for all the jurists and the grand jurists and of course specifically the administrators who really are going to prepare the jurists and the grand jurists. And so we'll need to be here for that and a constant form of education. So we did put together a plan that once we get into power and authority, we will be able to get the funding. We already know how we're going to get that funding. And then we would have staffs. Then we would have secretaries. We would have an office. We'd have people involved in a way that could answer all these letters. Right now, it's just not possible. So that's why we have an open forum. And I say this, maybe I don't say it often enough. It's been a while since I said this, as a matter of fact. But the purpose of our open forum is so that people have access to the leadership. On these open forums, the national leaders are on this, and I'm always on this, and Gerard's on this, and we're here to be. You ask us any question, any comment. We've given 3 hours a week up for on a Monday in order to answer questions and to respond to anything. Anybody that's got anything, if it's really, you can ask it on the open forum here. We don't run away from anything. You can just ask your questions. We're going to tell you the answers to the best of our abilities. Now, as far as the quo warrantos and different things, you know, we did something with the judges. We did something with the sheriffs. And we sent to every single sheriff, okay, papers. And
we faxed them, too.
We did faxes. We were doing faxes on a weekly basis. We were sending them. Now, we don't have every fax. If there's 3,000 sheriffs, maybe we got 2,500 sheriffs' fax.
You already had printed how many copies of that rules for the sheriffs, bailiffs, and jurors?
Oh, we have sent, which ones now? The one we're doing now?
Other one.
I've got one that's already been done. It's a white copy.
Wait, that's handbooks. We didn't send them to sheriffs, but we did alert the sheriffs that they were available. We've had sheriffs that requested it, and we've sent them to them. We told them that there was a PDF copy on the website, and if they wanted a pocket handbook, they can request it. We've had some requests for that. Most of our contact, we've had one contact with the sheriffs directly through the U.S. mail, and we sent a huge number. It took days. My wife, my son, my daughter, my niece, and her son, and myself. We worked for days putting this together. You know, the stuffing envelopes or packages, and putting we got the permit to do the permit at that point. Putting them in the envelopes and getting them out. And we did that with the judges also. Did some fall by the wayside? Absolutely. You know, we do emails, but we don't have all the emails. We do faxes, but we don't have all the faxes. And sadly to say, we didn't have all the addresses either, but we thought between the three we'd hit them all, and we did most of them more than one time. Now, what happens, though, is people seem to think that they know more than anyone else on the other end of this thing, and maybe they've been corrupted, and they throw this stuff in the garbage. So that could be a problem. It gets intercepted. Sometimes the sheriff looks at it, looks too overwhelming, looks too legal to me. I'll give it to the county prosecutor, the county
attorney,
and they'll come and say, I don't, these guys are crazy. I don't pay attention to them. You see, there's so many ways.
Look, at the short answer is to either print it up yourself and hand it to him. It's on the website.
And, yeah, that's what we told everyone.
Look,
he could
go get it himself. But
I met one of the other deputies downtown in Bremerton, Washington, and I asked him if they had discussed the writ mandamus in any of their meetings. He said no, they hadn't. He had heard of them, but he had no idea what they contained, and I went to hand him a copy of the one for sheriff. I said, well, here, you can have this one. Now, boy, his hands went palms out, and he took a step back, and he's like, no, you can't serve me. I'm not the sheriff. You can't serve me. And I told him, I kind of smiled. I said, no, I'm not serving you. I said, but here, you might just go ahead and read through this, talk to everybody else on the force about this, and ask the sheriff, how come you haven't heard anything about this? I said, but I'm not serving you. So he reached out and he took it from me. And he accepted it. Now, see, I was commissioned for 3.5 years out of this sheriff's department under a now-deceased sheriff. And the odd thing is, on my commission card, it was non-specific and non-expiring, where it said expiration date. He put in there non-expiring. So that'd be an interesting technical question. Am I or am I not still commissioned as a special deputy sheriff in this county? So, yeah, that could be an interesting point. But I also, I've been telling people I may run for sheriff this next go-around, because this guy's just not, he's too much a statist, apparently. And he just doesn't understand what's going on.
Well, let me ask you, have you had a chance to look at the book that we just put together? We just released it 2 days ago, I think it was. We put it up online.
If you just
and again, it's a draft.
If you just...
Huh?
Well, if you just put it together, then no, I've not had a chance to look at that one.
Okay, if you go to
I'm
our website...
I'm a stickler for terminology.
You're a stickler for what?
Go ahead.
All right, if you go up to our website... If you go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, right there on the front page, it's like two lines down, big, big letters. It says, Read Sheriff's Handbook, -draft. And this is a draft copy. So, Read Sheriff's Handbook, draft. Now, you could download that handbook right there. It's a PDF copy. It should be perfected by the end of the week, Lord willing. You know, right now, Jan does the perfecting on it, and his wife's ill. And again, I asked earlier on, everybody should say a prayer for his wife. She's in the hospital. But as soon as he's can get back and get back into things here with us, he's already perfected the book, so we're going to get that completed. Him and I will spend whatever time we need to go through, correct the punctuation and whatever has to be corrected in there, maybe add a few more little things. Since this draft was put, we've got another, I forget, maybe another 7 pages or 6 pages or something. Let me see. We got 74. I think we got 83 pages now. So we got another 9 pages we added to this. And we may have a little more before we're done. But this is the brunt of mostly, you know, what we got here. And so read through it, see what you think, give us some comments. If you think something's missing that we really need to cover in here, cover it. We one of the big things that we added in was a lot more in due process, to get more into details and specifics. And I covered a lot of that earlier on in this call. I don't know if you've been here all this time.
I missed some of it because I was out on the run. I also own a transportation business, a taxi service, and I talk to everybody all day long about this, and I keep sending them over toward NLA to do some of their own research and investigation. You'd be surprised how many people do. Pardon?
you can go back up to the website and click on the weekly call, and you'll be able to download this call or any other call, but then you'll be able to get what you missed later. I'll probably post this call tonight because Jan's not here, so I'll post it at the end of the night. I may not post it until the morning, but I'll get it posted within the next 12 hours. And then you can download this program and catch what you missed, because I did cover a lot of those details and what we put in here that's not in this book. But I think that'll be up. As a matter of fact, tonight or tomorrow morning, I'm going to post the latest booklet up. It'll have the 83 pages. It's still not, you know, perfected yet. It still needs punctuation and English corrections, but it'll be up there, and you'll get the latest. And the things that I added in this booklet, you'll find in red letter. So it'll be red lettered. You know that this is what was added. And so if you've read the booklet already, you don't have to go read the whole booklet to see what was added. But it was very important to add a lot on due process, because that's the key, what Sheriff
understand and look at. Right. You were talking about the thing. You just wanted to limit it to deals about the sheriff right now. So I'm going to clear the line, let somebody else go ahead and chime in. But I will be back, because I have a couple of reprimands and a couple of requests. One of them was about serving the local sheriff, and then a couple of questions.
All right. So, well, we'll take it all in. And again, you know, correction is as important as anything else. Correction is grievous to those who forsake the way, and we certainly want correction, because you know, we pride ourselves on being accurate, but we can't be 100%. Sometimes we make an error or do something wrong, and we just need to correct it. That's all.
Okay, well, I'll jump back in when you get to the general stuff.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, John.
All right, thank you.
I just wanted to say, Richard confirmed one of our concerns with, you know, we said, his paperwork, it looks too legal, it intimidates the sheriff. And he just confirmed it, where that deputy said, you can't serve me because it looks like a real legal document that you're being served, and that's kind of the thing that made you do this sheriff's book, am I not right? That you said,
we realize we frightened the sheriffs because they don't understand anything. You know, they're as ignorant as we are or were, and we still have a lot to learn. But yeah, they see the papers, it looks all legal, they figure they can't understand it, they don't know what it's all about, what does this have to do with me? They go talk to a lawyer. And a lawyer looks and says, don't worry about it, this is garbage. Oh, these people are nothing, they're just wackos. You know, and that, of course, is the problem. Look, we're up against an army of minions, they're called bar members, and they're everywhere. They're worse than roaches. There's nowhere in government you can't go that you're not any kind of a connection with anyone in government. You're surrounded by a swarm of lawyers, whether you realize it or not. You know, you just go in there and make a little correction or a little suggestion to the clerk or something, and are you threatening me? And before you know, you got a cop behind you, and so on.
He's in the bathroom right now, and I guess she's just.
So, all right. Okay. Anyway, we'll move on to the next person. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, Richard. Okay, let's go to 860. You got the mic. 860. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, this is the state of Connecticut. My first name is Anna.
Anna from Connecticut. How you doing, Anna? Go right ahead.
I'm so glad to speak. My understanding is that you were only taking Vegas calls, but mine pertain to a legal matter.
Yeah, we're taking calls from anywhere, but we're only taking calls concerning the sheriff's handbook right now. Later on, we'll come back, and any other call question you have, we'll try to help you. Okay? But if you don't have anything on the sheriff, we only have one other person. On the sheriff,
right.
And then after that, we'll move over to Brent for 20 minutes or whatever he takes time up to teach, and then we'll come back to the open forum. So what I should suggest to you is, if you want to get in line first, as soon as we move to over to Brent, get right into the queue, and you'll be one of the first ones. But right now we have two people back in line for the sheriff's questions. Okay.
So you're going to be on for till midnight? Is this how
we'll
the
be
show
on till midnight?
Is?
Yes, we'll be on till midnight.
Okay.
And by 11 o'clock, hopefully, you'll be 11
Thank
o'clock
you.
Eastern time. We'll probably be right back on open forum. So if you want to get
An
back
awesome
into
show.
The queue,
thank you. Okay, sure.
Get into the queue now, and you'll be one of the first ones. Let me finish with two other people, and then we're going to move over to Brent. Is Brent? Are you here? Has anybody seen Brent? Maybe someone wants to go hunting for Brent. Okay, let's go to Jeremiah from California. Go right ahead, Jeremiah.
Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted. Go right ahead.
Okay, how you doing today? Okay, excellent. Regarding the sheriff, question for you. It's a multi-part question. So the first part of it is about the sheriff's authority and if whether or not that's derived or comes from just, you know, God, or is it something that's established by constitution and legislation? That's my question about the sheriff. And the other thing...
Let me just go ahead and answer that first. And then we'll go to the second one. Okay, look, the sheriff's been around a long, long time. Matter of fact, Brent spoke about the sheriff. I think last week he mentioned quite a bit about the sheriff, or maybe it was the week before. And when he comes on, maybe he wants to expound some more about the sheriff. But look, at the bottom line of the sheriff was originally there for the king. He's there to make sure the law, you know. And, of course, we'll talk about the common law at this point in time. And he really is there to protect the king and to make sure that the law is adhered to. Of course, now we're the king. You know, our nation was set up the first time ever where the people are the king. Of course, we're kings of king. You know, God is the ultimate king of the court. We're the sovereigns of the court. But God is the king of the court. But we are all kings in our own domain. You know, we have our own homes. We're kings of our homes, kings of our own property. And we have unalienable rights. You see, what they did back early on is that they put the sovereignty into the king. And the king would make sure that the freemen, the people that he represented, make sure that they were not injured in any way, that the common law was applied and they were protected and they had rights. And that went so far, you know, of course, there's a lot of corruption came in. Next thing you know, you got a king out of control and then you got him on the side of the road with an axe on his head to sign the paper or die. We're talking about the Magna Carta. But it was never originally created, you know, the whole process was never really created so that the king was a king on his own, that he ruled over the people. No, he was there to serve the people. Of course, they turned that around. They did the same thing here in our government. They've turned everything around. They're our servants, and they make us their servants now. We have to pay them and, you know, pay them their tax and this and that. They get more and more money, more and more power, more and more authority, and we get weaker and weaker and less rights. So the sheriff is an important point because without the sheriff, you don't have the lawmen for the common law. The sheriff has to be an individual elected by the people. You can't whoever appoints that sheriff, if he's appointed, would control that sheriff. Just like, you know, the commissioner of the police department is controlled by the mayor. You know, the state police, I forget what they call the head of the state police, but, you know, that individual is appointed by the governor. If that guy gets out of line, the governor will fire him and replace him. If you have a sheriff that's appointed by anyone, well, then they have the power to get rid of them. Now, in the Constitution, when it comes to the marshal, as a matter of fact, the Judiciary Act the Judiciary Act of 1786.
What was that?
91. No, actually it was right in the beginning, 1789. The Judiciary Act of 1789 set up a process so that the marshal was appointed and could not be fired. He, you know, even though the president would appoint him, the president couldn't get rid of him. He had to fulfill his whole term. And that they dealt with, I think it was dealt with in Marbury versus Madison.
That's also constitutional, John. That exists within the Constitution. There's provisions that actually support your claim
right there.
That's for
the marshal. That's all for the marshal. So the marshal is really the sheriff on the federal level. Okay, now we have the sheriff on our level. If you don't have a sheriff like Connecticut, then you don't have no law, anybody to protect the law. You don't have a real lawman, because what you have is people who are controlled by political animals. That's what you have. You have to have a man or a woman that's elected. Let me finish it, though.
Let me ask you something.
You have to have someone that is elected. And that person has got to be a constitutional individual. You know, when I heard the gentleman earlier on mentioned about the sheriff doing traffic stops, I mean, oh, my God, how far off of understanding of anything or oaths of anything that is a sheriff. I mean, think about that.
What's going on, man?
The only way you can get a sheriff to do traffic stops, I would imagine, is to offer him some money. Because when he's stopping people and giving them tickets, it's going to that local town, okay, or the city or the village or wherever he's writing that ticket. They're going into that courtroom to pay that ticket. Is the sheriff getting a piece of that action? Okay. That is a problem right there, isn't it? The whole process is illegal and unconstitutional anyway, so it creates more of a problem.
Yeah.
But how can a sheriff go give tickets to people, especially if they're giving tickets? Let's just take the idea of the right to travel.
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
How can you? Sheriff,
great point, John. That's excellent.
So anyway, what's the next?
Well, it makes me laugh because the sheriff has some strict constitutional duty and authority, and so to have him interfering with, you know, local ordinance and the administration of local government seems a bit overbroad for their authority. Their authority is for issues of statewide concern. And also national concern too, but mostly statewide. But the other part of the question was this, John. I mean, trust me, this conversation could go on. But constables, I believe the term sheriff is in sometimes being used as a general word, right? And constable is also has authority under the common law to actually follow through with.
Is
you know,
elected?
Constitutional
is
provisions.
Is a constable elected?
Appointed.
Okay,
yes, appointed or elected. Mm-hmm.
Well, appointed
correct.
Is a problem. Elected is a whole new story.
Mm-hmm.
Brett might have the answer on that one, the difference between a constable and a sheriff, but go ahead.
Well, the idea is I think it comes down to generality, and that when you're dealing with a sheriff, right, you're dealing with an officer that is bound by legislation, that is a member of a general provision government, right, who's basically, you know, who get their authority from legislature, not the common law. But even so they can be appointed, in other words. The mayor could, the mayor, the sheriff, especially
sheriff
if the sheriff, the office of the...
No, a sheriff cannot
yes.
be appointed. He may be able to be appointed for a short period
well,
of time while election...
Hear me
place.
Out.
But
I
would imagine.
So
I would imagine.
Clarify.
Let me just say something here, though. Let's say a sheriff dies, or something happens, and he leaves office, and you have a vacancy now. Okay, I would imagine the highest-ranking deputy would take that sheriff's place, and he'd just be just as he's elected. No one's going to control that man or woman. Okay, until they can get a special election going and replace that sheriff.
They have an undersheriff for that, John.
Well, there you go. That's right. I remember.
Sheriff,
that's right.
They have an undersheriff. And there are provisions for appointing people in the counties and in the states when there's vacancies, and it usually goes up to, you know, the legislator or whatever. It depends on the office. You know, and I wanted to say, a constable is a lower guy than the sheriff. He's there to take some of the, you know, the work, to, you know, the mundane work out. And there are certain things he can do and he can't do, but they're usually never elected a constable. A constable applies for a job and he's, I don't know who appoints him, but he's definitely an appointed official, as far as I know. I mean, we used to have one in my town. He used to run around and chase the kids around, you know, like put bubble gum in the street, and stupid stuff like that. But anyway,
well,
go ahead.
Here, Gerard. Here's a case from Washington, 1912. It says the word sheriff, deputy, or coroner, right? So sheriff, deputy, or coroner are used in whatever code they're quoting here, providing that no sheriff, deputy sheriff, or coroner shall be liable for neglecting or refusing to serve any civil process unless the legal fees and an indemnity bond, if he requires one, are first tendered to him. Now, that's an important point. It brings up other issues. Okay, I'm sure alarm bells are probably going off for you guys right now, and that's good. But Okay, so those words are used in a general sense.
Can you repeat that? Because I wasn't paying attention and something else came up. But can you repeat what you just said?
Sure, because I'm reading it. It's this is from 39 Words and Phrases 308. If you go check that out, it's basically legal definitions. It says the word sheriff, deputy, or coroner as used in this code, this other REM and balance code, whatever that means. I don't know what state this is from. I think it's Washington State. So, providing that no sheriff, deputy, or coroner shall be liable for neglecting or refusing to serve any civil process unless legal fees and indemnity bond, if he requires one, are first tendered to him, are used in a general sense. So, a generic sense. In other words, the word sheriff is used in a generic sense in that code. The deputy is also used. Hold on. It goes on. Let me finish this. You're going to like it. Okay? It goes on to state, and are intended to apply to all officers charged with the duty of serving process requiring the seizure of property, and hence include a constable serving an execution issued out of a justice court. Now, this is from 1912.
Well, I would object to everything.
Now, my most important point, if I could just make one point in closing here, because I don't want to take too much time, and that is this. I believe that under common law, it's possible that, you know, we can appoint or elect who we want. It doesn't have to have the title of sheriff. We can appoint or elect who we want under our local government or even as an arm of the state. And therefore, we could have this justice court, the courts of justice, you know, justice of the peace and all that. That's something different. I mean, you have Supreme Court and then you have Superior Court. Superior courts are inferior. Obviously, you got sheriffs in there working with the Superior Courts, and that's also evidence that they work for the de facto. They're not under common law, John.
No.
There's a big difference.
They don't work for the judiciary. They don't work for the courts. They are part of the court process and system. They're totally independent of the judge, the prosecutor. They're independent of everyone. And they're there to protect all the people, not to protect that judge like they think they are. Because I've talked to these guys. They think they're there to protect that judge. Oh, someone may harm him. No. You got to protect the judge, of course, but you got to protect me, too. You got to protect the people, and what you're here is to make sure that the process of law goes forward and correctly. And if you see something out of line, and there's a problem with it, and if it's evil, and it's a violation of law, and it's something that someone should be arrested for, go down and see the grand jury, get yourself an indictment, and take care of that judge or that prosecutor or whoever it is that you got to deal with. I would never tell a sheriff or suggest to a sheriff to arrest any elected individual or any appointed individual. What they want to do first is see if that's a crime, go get an indictment. And you could do that. You could walk into the sheriff should always know when the grand jury is in session. He should have it on his calendar. Oh, they're coming into session tomorrow. Okay, you know, and he may go down to the court and put his signature down there. I want to get a slot, or just make the call and say, get me in to see the grand jury. I'd like to get 20 minutes of their time. Okay, whatever it is, okay? And the sheriff should then go down there and see the grand jury and ask for an indictment, take that paper, slap it into the clerk, get the process going, and go make his arrest. Okay?
No,
that's what he needs to do. Yeah.
There's a big, big, big difference between an elected official and an appointed official. All elected officials, not just the sheriff, but all elected officials, are meant to be independent. They're not able to be fired. They're not able to be told what to do because they have to be independent, and they have to represent all the people. An appointed individual is, by his very nature, he could be unappointed, and so he's not free to do it because that his job is threatened. At. I was an elected official, and they give you can't even require certain education for them. You can't say you have to have this amount of schooling or that amount of schooling,
right?
Because he's elected by the people, and they can put whoever they want in there. But once they put him in there, guess what? Unless he commits a crime and gets an indictment, he's in that office till his term is over.
And that is exactly why no one but a sheriff or his extended arm, that being the deputy, can serve a warrant or file any papers on an serve any papers on an individual to seize anything, or to get in and look for something, you know, search and seizure, or anything of that nature, even whether it's civil or whether it's criminal. It does not matter. That's the sheriff's job and the sheriff's job only. Even the federal government, when the FBI comes in, if they want to serve a warrant on someone, to take property or whatever the case may be, they need to be letting the sheriff know, we're coming into your county and this is what we're going to be doing. Okay, stop in my office first. Let me make sure your papers are ready. I may send one of my deputies out with you. You see, this is the constitutional law enforcer. He's got to be there for all of this stuff. You can't entrust this to any police officer, anybody who's appointed, or anybody who is hired. You can't give it to them. It must be to the elected sheriff or his extended arm, in other words, a deputy. No one else can do this.
Continuing though, I know, because we brought up some other things. You know, this whole thing about appointment or election, you know, when you're dealing with qualified electors, especially because this is what our republic is all about, is having qualified electors represent the people.
Well, you know what I'm realizing, that we're getting off base here, though.
Well, I'm talking about the sheriff and his authority, so all right, I'll finish it up,
is there anything
we'll get back
you're suggesting? To... Are you suggesting anything that we should add to the book?
Nah, if I do, I'll just have to contact you privately. It's more of an open call forum, so I'm trying to kind of stay general.
If anybody's got anything they think we should add, get a hold, you know, send it to Jan. You know, Jan may not respond for a while because his wife is ill, but just send it to Jan, and when he gets back to things, he'll respond. But go ahead.
I got this case right here from Texas Civil Appellate Court in Austin, right, 1926. It says, sheriff is administrative officer of court, right, which is kind of interesting because that means the court is the people. The people are coming. See, all the state is basically the conglomerate, right, of the people. So the idea that the sheriff is an administrative officer of the people means he has to do what the people say. And so I'm gonna conclude with these statements that, John, you're right on. You guys are on a good track right now. I think everybody that's listening is probably getting a great education, not just from this call, but also from following up on all the resources. Just remember, though, that common law is not bound by statute. You know, so we don't, if it turns out that the office of sheriff is something that's created by the legislature, or if the sheriff is a legislative creature, we need to keep that in mind. Also.
Well, statutes are policies and procedures for elected and appointed and even just, employed individuals for the government. It's to tell them what they can do and what they can't do. It tells them how they can call the grand jury if they want, how the process could go forward to call for the grand jury and call a trial jury and go through a process of bringing them together. All of that is there for them. But that doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. The sheriff can go get his grand jury without a prosecutor. If he's got to get a monitor to go in there and talk, therein is the problem. Okay, forget the monitor. Get rid of him. Just go get it. Go do what you got to get done and then arrest whoever you have to do if you get your indictment. But look at the whole thing, though, has got to be the man has got to be free, or the woman's got to be free, and they got to not bound down by anyone but their own conscience and their duty to, execute the law, the Constitution, according to the words of what it means.
Check this out. There's this thing called sheriff's jury.
Jeremiah.
One thing real quick. Sheriff's jury.
18 minutes. You've been on 18 minutes.
I'm sorry.
We got
to
move on.
It's time to back out.
You know what? This is exciting stuff, you guys. It's really, I'm not trying to steal the limelight.
Get back in.
I'm not trying to steal
the
limelight.
Later on, and you can bring some more of this stuff. But if you don't have anything to add to the booklet, then we'll move on because I got to move over to Brent.
Well, all right. Let me know if you have my information, John?
For what?
To contact me for grammar checking.
Well, Jan is handling that. If you want to, any of that could go through Jan. If you want to talk to Jan, if you got any ideas or thoughts, and then he'll bring it in. And then if anything's good, he'll discuss it with me. He'll discuss.
I think you guys should appoint me.
He'll discuss it with me anyway. So.
All right, I'm looking for an appointment. I'm trying to be your appointed grammar checker. All right, guys.
Well, that's okay. Thanks. All right, we'll take you up on that then. Matter of fact, when I meet with Jen, I'll try to pull you in off the fly. I think you're on my Skype, aren't you? I'm sure I have you on my Skype, don't
I? I don't even know. I don't use Skype. But I'll give you this address right now.
I see your phone number.
We got his
I
number here,
you.
John.
Yeah, I can call
you. Got
you.
My number.
Let me just write this down, because we got it up on the board.
And don't worry about the naysayers. I'm not a troll, and I'm not a perpetrator.
Well, look, if you want to come in, sometimes we have more than one person. A while back, we used to have two or three, and even more people. And when we perfected things, we'd have a lot of people, saying, giving us the advice to put a comma here and a semicolon there, or whatever it is, break the sentence up, it's too long, whatever
it's called
it is.
Editing.
We can use that. We definitely need that. Okay. So cool. I'll keep you up on that. When Jen calls me to go through this process, I'll try to pull you in off the fly.
That'd be great. I can't wait to hear from you. Talk to you soon, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Okay. One other call, then we're going to go to Brent, and that's Felicia from Florida. Go right ahead, Felicia.
Hello, I'm going to be quick. I submitted my documents to the courts for public records back in June from the grand jury. I also hand-delivered them to the sheriff's office. They didn't call me back. I went in and spoke to them twice. They said it wasn't a legal document, and that was back in August. And then I sent a letter to the sheriff about the writ of possession that I was being threatened for. They did nothing, and they did a writ of possession, and I'm out of my house. Isn't the sheriff also responsible, because I told him months ahead of time when it was actually
that sheriff is as liable as anyone else. If he refused to take the information that you were giving him to make him understand that if he participated, he was breaking the law, and even if he refused to look at it and he still doesn't have the knowledge, that's his problem at that point. You served that information to him. The fact that he thinks that the grand jury has to be anointed by the government somehow or by the court system, well, again, he's got another thing coming also. He's got to learn something else. So, yeah, when you go, look, at some point in time, we're going to win this system. We got so many things going, and we're going to accomplish our goal. And just remember one thing. You can go back as soon as we have courts that are actually working, because that's what our goal is. Once we get that going, you go back and get everything. Keep good records. Keep the information. You can hold all these people liable for this, including that sheriff. Look, shame on that sheriff for raising his hand and swearing to an oath that he doesn't understand. Shame on him. And he knows he doesn't know. He knows he doesn't understand, because he's got to go and talk to a prosecutor to find out if he can even indict somebody. He has to have his monitor. His mommy and daddy got to be there for him. Shame on him. And I have no look. It's a problem. We want to give the sheriff's passes as much as we can, but shame on that guy. Shame on that guy. No, I wouldn't give him a pass at all.
And then they called me the day that they was actually trying to get me out of the house, and I was like, I'm at your house. Miss Collins, can you open the door? And I was sitting right at my park looking at him. I'm like, I'm not home. And he's like, well, you can't come back on this property anymore. It now belongs to so-and-so, so-and-so. And if you come back, we're going to arrest you for trespassing. I rode right past my house, looked at them, and said, good morning. And I have it on video. They had five people at my house, two deputy sheriffs, and two and three local cops, and the guy with the little Maserati.
That's the guy making all the money, huh?
I went down to the courthouse, and I got a copy of the writ of possession with the judge's hand signature, and I went and got a copy of the deed, and it says special warranty deed. And on the last page, it says, Chicago Title Insurance Company, and somebody whited out their name. The name is whited out. It's whited out.
These people, they have no shame. They don't stop. And look at They got an answer to all this. You know, they do.
They was going to try to arrest me.
They got a lot to answer to.
I don't have a record. They was going to try to arrest me, and I know the local cops. And I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah. Well, look at me.
You're graduated to a paper terrorist now, whether you know it or not. That's a good title to have right now, so don't worry about it.
They was trying to give me a record. I don't have a record.
Yeah. Our hearts are with you and everything, and bear in mind, you know, justice will come. And if it doesn't come in this world, then God will deal with it and figure it out at the end. But we don't have to worry about it. You know,
I can't let him get away with it.
Vengeance is mine. But look at, when we get justice and back into the courts, you need to be restored. And those people have to restore you, because when we get common law courts actually open, you get the Article III courts and the federal courts, common law courts on both state and federal levels. There's a requirement for restoration. Forget these fine things. I don't even know where these fine things come from. You know, Brent's online. Maybe when he gets talking, he could talk to us a little bit if he knows any knowledge.
What the heck
does the state? Why does the state make a fine? Why did they? If they made a fine, that money should go to the person that was injured. What is that about? You know,
goes in their pockets.
It just annoys me. I tell you.
My neighbor told me that guy fixed my house up. It painted it, redid the roof. They went on the inside, just did all this stuff, and I'm like, well, tell him thank you, because he's going to have to give it back.
Yeah, when you got, that's right, yeah. I was just going to say that, yeah. All right, look, we got to move on. Felicia, if you want to talk some more, you can get back into the queue. We're going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let me, the Brent Winters. By the way, Gerard, you going to take control of the panel here? Gerard?
Said yes.
You have to mute yourself. Okay. You unmuted yourself. All right. We're going to move over to Brent Winters. Brent is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And he's going to talk to us about the Declaration of Independence and moving on from there. Before you get started, Brent, what do you know about fines? Where does that come from? What's the purpose of them? What's that all about? Do you know anything about that, Brent?
Yeah, I didn't catch the word. What is it?
Fine, F-I-N-E.
Oh, fine.
$10,000 fine and 3 years in prison, you know?
Oh, during the times of John Lackland, the infamous signer of Magna Carta, fines were major and have been all along. I'm just citing one example, but this is an ancient thing going back 1,000 years. Well, yeah, 1215, that'd be pretty near 1,000 years, but they used fines to bring in a lot of money. It got so bad that it was one of the complaints of Magna Carta. They didn't complain. They just said this isn't going to happen anymore, and they made the king swear that he wouldn't do it. He was fining people for killing a rabbit if they got caught, or, of course, a stag or a deer especially, or for not maintaining a bridge in your vicinity the way it ought to be fined. Of course, there are other fines were put on people for whole districts of people, 100, which was equivalent to a township, put on them for little things. Those were intended to encourage people to do certain things. For example, when Henry VIII commissioned the translation of the Bible, he stole Tyndale's translation and claimed it for himself, that he was giving it to the country. He commanded that a Bible, a large Bible, be put on the reading stand in every parish church. It'd be chained so nobody could steal it, and that a reader would be provided for people that couldn't read that wanted to hear the Bible read, and any parish that didn't do that within a month would be fined X number of marks, and it went up from there. Well, that wasn't probably so much as for making money. He knew people would comply. Fines are to encourage right behavior. That's the lawful reason for a fine. But they are a way to draw in revenue. I know a judge here locally, and I live in a rural county. He got put on the bench, and he was handling the traffic call and that kind of thing. And He told me, he said, I didn't realize, well, that's kind of a low-level position before they put him in the main judgeship. He's retired now. But he said, I didn't realize how much money came in through, for example, parking tickets, traffic tickets. He said they were pulling in $300,000 a week, every week in this little county, just on that one thing of fining people. And that's enough money to make a difference in a county. That can hire a few, another prosecutor or two, or another clerk in the court, or it can $300,000. Well, you can imagine what could you do with $300,000. You could fix the sidewalk outside the courthouse. You could have it replastered. Whatever. It becomes something that must depend on. It's fine. Certainly, speeding tickets have that status now. And as you'd pointed out, if there's no injury, and there isn't in such cases, if they're just fine, it quickly degenerates into a money-making tool. People say, well, and I used to listen to Newt Gingrich talk about this, and he talked for an hour and had all the illustrations, and he sounded very convincing. The government ought to be run like a business. And we have people that run for public office, and they're businessmen, and they say, by golly, like Ross Perot, we're going to run this like a business. Don't listen to that kind of childish, silly talk. Governments have never been run by like businesses, and they never will be run like businesses, because governments are not for profit. If governments were for, no, they're not for profit. I know they're abused to steal money. I understand that. But that's not running a government like a business. If something is legitimate, it runs like a business can be run like that. Government will never be run like that, and people who seek government positions are just as often as not looking for security, and they're looking for a way to tap into the largesse of the taxpayer that he provides. And when that happens, well, governments are going to be just as often as not takers. I can't say that's true in every case, of course, but certainly it draws those kind of people. And anybody who says anything different is just being blind or doesn't want to acknowledge the truth of the matter. So governments, that's why we say government must be limited. And that's what our Constitution tries to do. Government is a necessary evil. There are a couple of things that we can't do, so we put government in place, but only government can legitimately do that. And what are those? Well, there are two fundamental things that government does that we cannot by ourselves do. As a practical matter, it's not practical that we by ourselves can deliver justice. The powerful party has to deliver justice, and we by ourselves can't effect a national defense. So we have the militia of the several states. And we the people is that category of people at common law. That's why our Constitution says that. We the people denotes, taken from the Hebrew Old Testament, Ha'am, the people. We the people denotes that group of men to whom they believed, and I think they're right, God has delegated the duty of government. And that group of men is called, in our modern day, the militia. We the people. The militia had two duties. It formed the jury pool, so the militia was the deliverer of justice. And then the militia, of course, had a duty to keep each member, to keep bills of our country, to keep themselves armed. And that's the common law on the matter. That's God's law on the matter. I'm just reporting what it says. It's not like it's complicated. It's not like it's open for interpretations. Not like there are differences of opinion as to what it says. It says what it says. When I say that, I mean the laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, and the laws of nature is God written in the Bible. It's just a matter of fact. And then the question comes, what are we going to do with the facts as they have been delivered to us? History, if it's true, is fact, and that's the facts of history. Then two duties of government, and that's really the only two, when it comes right down to it, that are legitimate, that are lawful, that God has bequeathed to us. But those are big. Don't think they're small. They're huge. The responsibility of armed defense and the responsibility of justice take in just about everything. And those old Cornelius Van Til, the great proponent, grew up on a dairy farmer in northern Indiana, became professor of theology at Princeton for years, and well known around the world for his, as a leader of the Reformed faith of Christianity, as they called it. He said, where the Bible speaks, that's the laws of nature of God of our Declaration of 76, where the Bible speaks, it speaks truth. And he said, and not only that, it speaks about everything. So it takes in all. Well, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, that phrase taken from the Scottish Enlightenment, through John Locke. John Locke then, Tom Jefferson quoted him, and that's our fundamental law. It's stated there in our Declaration of 76, but I wanted to get to the Declaration of 76 because we've been going through it, clause by clause and blow by blow. And by the way, the things that I say here may or may not agree with the opinions and positions of National Liberty Alliance, but they're nice enough to let me say a few words, and I enjoy the opportunity to say what I've learned. Otherwise, it'd swell up inside of me and burst. So it's good to let it off, like letting off steam. Now, we're in paragraph 14, where we left off last time. It says, he, that is, King George III, the crown of England, he has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. I'll read it again. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. Huh. Well, King and Parliament in England were trying to avoid common laws, time-consuming procedures. They're time-consuming, the procedures of our common law, called the course of our common law, called most familiar today, called due process. It's time-consuming. It's the modest inconvenience that our common law says that every man must have before you take his life, or his liberty, or his property, or a combination thereof. What is he entitled to? He's entitled to the course of our common law called due process. What is due process? It is the process that is due and owing to all concerned. Well, King and Parliament wanted to replace due process with the commands of military law, martial law. And he was getting the job done through about three or four avenues. One of them was, of course, admiralty law. He had extended it from the high seas to the ports to the warehouses on the piers and then off to the homes where he said people were hiding contraband shipped in by ship. So he tried to apply the admiralty law to all of that. And it was like just a story. One lawyer said if you threw a corn cob in a bucket of water and carried it into the courtroom, he'd take admiralty jurisdiction over it. If it had anything to do with water, if it ever touched water. Well, that's what they were doing back then. And, of course, admiralty law is a form of martial law. He was using that. He was using the canon law. This is a fascinating subject. The Declaration of 76 mentions that. The canon law, the Roman law, the church law, had been, by act of Parliament, made the law of the province of Quebec in Canada just before we separated from Britain. It made the Americans terribly mad because they had fought some of them all of their lives. They'd seen some awful bloody scrapes and with the Jesuits coming down from Quebec into the colonies with the red men, and they'd work them up, and they'd slaughter people, slaughter children. In the wintertime, they'd come down, and the snow would be red with their blood, and the village was an ugly business. Our Declaration of 76 cites that, talks about the red man not taking cognizance of sex or age or infirmity. Just slaughter everybody. That was really happening. Again, that's the facts of the matter. That's the facts of history, and we can't change those. And it was a concern, but it was the law, the canon law that was up in Quebec, and the Americans had fought a terrible war along with the British, and the Americans had paid for it in blood and treasure against the French. And that went on, called the French and Indian War, French and Indian. That's the red man. That word's not used much anymore, it seems like. Used to be you said Indian. People knew what you were saying, but it's the red man here in the Americas, the first Americans of which I speak. And I don't mean to be derogatory toward them, because they also fought alongside our continental soldiers, some of the tribes did. But politics being what they are, sometimes they were on the other side. But the French and Indian War had occurred. It was a terrible, long, hard, bloody conflict, finally settled on the Plains of Abraham, up near Quebec in Canada, up there in that province, and a large battle. And that battle settled the destiny of North America, the Battle of the Plains of Abraham. Called the Plains of Abraham because the farmer that owned the farm up there, his first name was Abraham, so they called his farm the Plains of Abraham. That's where the battle was fought. And then after that battle, and the English gained control of this part of the world, the Parliament, not long after that, passed a law that said Quebec could have their law of the city back. They could have their canon law. And to make matters worse, they extended the boundaries of Quebec clean down to the Ohio River. People don't stop to consider what really was going on when this declaration was written. And so all of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan were all said to be part of Quebec. And all of those places, if they were part of Quebec by the Quebec Act, as they called it, as Parliament called it, the canon law of Rome became the law of all of that area, according to Parliament. Well, that made a colony of Virginia very angry, because the charter that the Crown had given to Virginia extended clean to the Mississippi River, at least, if not further. They knew it went that far. And that took in, Virginia alone, took in the lower part of Ohio, the lower half of Illinois and Indiana. And during our war with Britain, to separate from Britain, Patrick Henry, governor of Virginia, commissioned a man by the name of George Rogers Clark to travel from Virginia with about 165 men. He picked up some in Kentucky. They were a vicious bunch, very dangerous. They called them the Long Knives. They were white men. But he took them cleaned the Kaskaskia on the Ohio River in what is now Illinois and captured the British fort there. Took them by surprise, and the British didn't know what to do, so they just threw a big party, and everybody had a ball and danced with the girls. And then they left there, and all the rivers were swollen between there and the Wabash River, and they captured a fort called Vincennes on the Wabash River. But that time it was... They didn't have fun doing that. It was quite a ruse they played on them. They made them think there were about 500 of them by whooping and hollering and building fires, but they took that fort without losing a man. And by doing so, Virginia recaptured all of the territories that Parliament said had been transferred to Quebec. This is fascinating to me. I know a lady up in Quebec now, and she's complaining. She lives in Toronto, up in that area. She complains that there is no common law there, and she's right. There are two places in North America that are not common law jurisdictions. One of them is Quebec, still yet today, because of the Quebec Act. Of course, the war we had with Britain pushed Quebec back into Canada and pushed it out of the colonial charter areas, including mostly Virginia, but some of the others too, going west. To the Mississippi. But there's Quebec in Canada as a law of the city jurisdiction, civil law, and the state of Louisiana, who is settled by some of the same Frenchmen, descendants of those people up in Quebec, not to mention French that came from France through the Gulf of Mexico. But it's heavily Roman Catholic in its origins, and therefore Quebec and Louisiana are comfortable with the canon civil law, or they were. I don't know that Louisiana is so much anymore. Louisiana has changed a lot. Our common law has overlaid much that has happened there, and they have jury trials now, at least since 1968. And that's the way our common law works. It has a way of overwhelming if it's turned loose. It will overwhelm all other, well, the only other really tradition under different labels, the law of the city. Well, all forms of the civil law and martial law is one of those forms that they demand. Civil law, we call it civil law. It's not civil at all. Civil means city. It's a martial kind of a law. And in modern times, and when I say modern, I'm going back to the Roman Empire. In modern times, the civil law arose out of the Roman legions. It's a martial law. Administrative law, bureaucratic law, we call it sometimes, is civil law. It demands instant obedience. Of course, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, martial law for armed forces, demands instant obedience. The law of the city is city life. And the laws you live under and all the tons of ordinances you live under demand obedience without reason. Just demand obedience. That's what the law of the city is all about, in opposition to the law of the land. And the law under the law of the land, there's not a problem until there's a problem. And the only problem you could have if you lived in a pure common law tradition would be if you get in a dispute with your neighbor. Well, you go to court and hash it out. You'd have a fight called a trial. Well, our common law does not demand obedience, and it does not demand that you seek permission for everything you do. The law of the city tends toward that. You don't do anything unless you have permission. Just think about men in the military. They have to await orders. And men in the military are conditioned that way. They await orders. They don't act until they're told what to do. That's the nature of military life. Well, that's good there. That's what the law works good there, that military law. But military law is not for us that are not part of the armed forces. And if it is applied here, we call that the person that does that a tyrant. And of course, it's good for them. They like it. They're in control. But common law searches the past to understand the future, and it seeks truth in light of past acts done. Our common law does not cut itself off from the past. It likes history. As a matter of fact, without former opinions and case laws, we call it, it's not really law, it's just the findings of courts. Without that, we don't have any common law. You see, the law of the city never looks to history, never looks backward. It is no accident that the left in America today is attempting to destroy emblems and symbols of history, tearing down the Confederate monuments, all those kind of things. That's what the law of the city always does. It hates the past. It seeks to avenge the past. It doesn't want to learn from the past. It doesn't want to know about the past. The law of the land is just the opposite. Just an observation. I like history. I like history, and I'm convinced I'm right-headed about my position on law and government. Our law of the land is superior in every way to the law of the city. And I like history. And I have found that people that have their heads headed in that direction, they like history too. And I find that those folk on the left, those folk that call themselves liberal, the George Soros, Hillary Clinton crowd, I've discovered that they hate history. They don't know anything about it, aren't interested in it, means nothing to them. And that's why they keep swimming in the same sewage. I don't want to swim in the same sewer. I want to get out of it and move forward. They're sticks in the mud. They want to stay in the past. And they enjoy, I suppose, swimming in the sewage. And that's what they end up doing, and just being stuck in mud and filth and not moving ahead. But looking to the past enables you to intelligently negotiate the future, deal with it. You can't beat it, but you can stay one step ahead of things if you know the past. Because if you know the past, you learn the lessons that teach you by observation what men will do. And history just goes around in circles, and the same old questions keep arising with different people and different technology, that's true, but still it's the same old questions. So we look ahead, and we we know a lot if we are interested in the past, and our common law looks to the past to gather its wisdom. And there's a lot of wisdom as long as you've got hindsight. But the martial law, though needful in battle and needful at sea, in preparation for war, must remain as all civil law. It must remain in ignorance of the past for whatever reason. That's what it's meant to do. Our Constitution puts its armed forces under command of a non-military commander-in-chief called the President of the United States, and requires him to act only at the advice and consent of the Senate. And likewise, our ancient common law required the commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states to serve only at the advice and consent of the elders, called the witan. It's never changed. And that phrase, advice and consent, the Senate, Senate means old man, white-headed man, is the same as the ancient common law concept that says that men had to act only on the consent of the witan. Witan's related to our word white. It's an old Anglo word, and it means old white-headed men. Just like Senate is the Latin word that means old white-headed men. I find, though, that most of those senators, they have hair that's chemically dependent. If it turns white, they dye it. That becomes abundantly apparent as you watch them grow older. So they're trying to deny the fundamental meaning of the word. But what I'm driving at is this phrase of our Constitution, advice and consent. I have a copy. It's not the original, obviously, but I have a copy of a land deed. Amazingly, it looks very much like the deeds we have today. And it was a land deed to transfer a hide of land, a hide, that's about as much land as a man could plow with a yoke of oxen in a day, H-Y-D-E, that's what they used to call it in England, transferring a hide of land and 10 wagon loads of wood, that's what it says. And the deed was made when King Alfred the Great was 6 years old. That would have been back in the 800s, around the year 800, way back there, centuries ago. And the words advice and consent are in that document. Well, that tells me that as a common law phrase, it goes back at least that far, of course. And he couldn't sell the king at that time. By law, wasn't allowed to sell a hide of land and 10 wagon loads of wood without the advice and consent of the witan. Listen, when a man became king, and he became king by the witan's choice, and when he did, all of a sudden he was under their control as to a lot of things. Not everything, but as to a lot of things, including even his ability to alienate and sell his own land and his own wagon loads of wood. Now, the one thing he did have a free hand at once he was in office, once war was declared and the witan declared war, the Council of Elders, just like the Congress, has to declare war, same principle. But once war was declared, he had a free hand to do what he thought was best, as any military commander must. Because, again, when it comes to war, a different law kicks in. A law that demands instant, unbending obedience on pain of death. That's the law of the city. And we're either tending toward the one, the law of the city, or the law of the land. The law of the city is about men. The law of the land is about man. The law of the city is about destroying an enemy, about dominating other men, in other words. And that's what it does. The law of the land is about dominating the land. And therein lies some of the grand differences between the two. Well, I've been talking long enough, but I appreciate it again. And well, by the way, you can find more about this subject at www.commonlawyer.com, and you can find there how to listen to me on the radio 6 days a week, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and pick the time you want to listen, I suppose. But it tells all that at commonlawyer.com. And Gerard or John, back to you. And Gerard, by the way, I sent you something. I messaged you something. You can find it when you look at your messages, and John too, but I don't think he's on. Back to you. And I may have to go, Gerard, and not be available for really longer.
Yeah, I'm still here in the background. So I saw that you went through the sheriff's book and made some comments. I was just reading through some of that. Maybe we'll talk tomorrow. There was two of them that I didn't understand, and I'd like to get a better understanding. But a lot of good comments. I appreciate it.
Well, I can't talk tomorrow till later in the day, though. But
that's okay.
We'll
even if we
together.
Don't do it tomorrow, the next day, it doesn't matter. It's going to be all week before we actually get this this book, you know, perfected and get everything else that we want to get in it. So.
Well, look forward to talking, John.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate
it.
Hey, any feedback on our radio program the other day?
No, I haven't. I've been running nonstop, and I haven't had time to talk to Randy, and I want to do that. Maybe if he's on, he might say something. But
We'd like to come back again and do some more and expand and expound as much as we can. Anyway, we're trying to get. I really want to get a campaign going, so to speak, for radio interviews. We want to get the word out, particularly on the sheriff's program. We're really pushing, and
That technology can't be ignored. I agree. It's out there. And if a guy wants to get the word out, that's the way to do it. It can be done now, these days.
Okay. All right. Well, let's try to talk in the next few days.
Okay. Good idea.
Okay. Someone was talking?
Yeah, this is Terry in Colorado.
You're coming in low. Can you get a little closer to your mic?
Yeah, the station that you hear that on is local here, the Randy Yarborough Show, and I heard it rebroadcast last Saturday. So,
great. How did it come out?
It came out pretty good. I thought.
I know we had a lot of problems with moving, you know, the music, not hearing the music and not knowing that the commercials were coming in, but I think we fixed that as time went on. So.
Yes.
I appreciate that, Terry. Okay, Gerard, go ahead. You got the board. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 to get into the queue. We only got two people in there right now, so *6, get into the queue. Any questions, any comments?
Okay, I don't have a name. It's a phone number, 860, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, your first name and your state, please.
Hi, my name is Anna, and this is from Connecticut.
Anna from Connecticut. A lot of Connecticutans in here tonight, huh? Go ahead.
Yeah, the Constitution state, you know.
Oh, yeah. They got rid of the sheriffs, though.
I got my shoes half off. The reality here is this is a legal matter pertaining to those summary judgment courts, those family courts. To understand the case, it would take hours to talk about, but you know how fishy these courts can get. But my question is, I have a smelly dead rat kind of case where I was inhumanely entered into a study where my attorney had modestly got a set of some money, and she got this money in order for to proceed the case. She had told a good friend of mine, I call her Erin Brockovich, by the way. She's listening tonight in Connecticut. There's a lot of Connecticut people out there. So what's going on here is I was accused of crimes I didn't commit. We know how they work with their preponderance of evidence and such like that, but when I say I smell a dead rat, my attorney, you know, I've created several emails. I've lined it up. I've got Human Rights Commission involved. But we're talking about a Nazi doctor, one of their hired gun assassins. I did the research on, along with Erin Brockovich. But this is real stuff. They tortured me. They duplicated the Stanley Milgram experiment. I jump around, but you got to understand legal abuse syndrome. But, of course, you guys do. What had happened is in this experiment, Dr. Mantell, many years back,
He had he does not have a doctor's license. They want me to enter a plea, but what he had done is he whether participants knew they were part of the study or what, teachers with students would ask to spell words and they would receive shocks. It's the experiment that shocked the world, the Stanley Milgram experiment. But Dr. Mantell had duplicated it. I'm trying to talk fast. The American Psychological Association had taken his license away. But the big human rights part of it is that social workers, they use their own entities against you while visiting the child, and they worked in collusion with others to implicate me in a crime of poisoning my daughter. My daughter was born healthy. She continues to thrive. She was never poisoned. Even suggesting that I had poisoned my paramour, which is the father of the baby. It's a very sick situation because my attorney had told Erin Brockovich that she had gotten money for the study. There are so many crimes in this case. It stinks. I'll go back. They want to serve me a termination for my parental rights. The reason is they had to prove that I was dangerous and work on more than stereotypes and discrimination. But social workers are no longer granted immunity. Sean McMillan pulled a case up in California, federally speaking, where, you know, we're talking about false witness and perjury, and they did win. The reality here is that in the state here, you can't sue Connecticut. I'm not looking for money. I'm scared. I feel like Darby Shaw in the Pelican Brief right now. This is an alarming call for you guys right now, whether you can believe it or not. But, you know, with with these types of agencies, nothing should surprise anybody. But this all started because my child was born at home, and two doctors did some white coat crimes where they signed an emergency PEC, which is a physician certificate, on bad faith and fraud as well. Saying that she was surgically ill and she was going to die, my daughter, the day before, I have the fax paperwork, the day before she was even born, before she even emerged from my womb. The reality here is that, you know, I'd be up against a big CEO at the hospital. It's been 2 years. My attorney admitted, she said, you know, sometimes we got to rob Peter to pay Paul to and that's a result of the circumstances here. It goes on and on and on, but this doctor needs to be exposed. The system needs to be exposed. I mean, we're talking about expired notary commission stamps. The commissioner, the notary, it was expired like 5 years ago. Is this common in these cases? Sure, why not, you know? I don't know what I can do, honestly. A 2-year mark means that there's a termination for, you know, the money won't be trickled from Congress anymore, and the baby gets adopted out. The reality was is it was a kidnapping to begin with from the hospital on the ex parte with a physician certificate, and I've been tortured all along the way. Dr. Mantell does this Nazi doctor, and he goes back. He actually works for the U.S. Army, and this is more like a it's a way to stifle political dissidents. And there were two other previous kidnappings. Now, this was, you know, where where DCF, CPF went rampant. And, again, more fraud at the hospital, state-sanctioned kidnapping. I can't get into details, but where, because I had disagreed with the agency, this was the first kidnapping that I was to be titrated against my will to ensure competency, although not guaranteed. But with intramuscular injections of atypical antipsychotics, you know, this is just absolutely insane. It's a real humdinger for you guys tonight. But I've been tortured. Dr. Mantell studies the willingness to torture and obedience trials. He wanted to prove in Germany, he worked over the Max Planck Institute. He stole his licenses. He worked over with some people from Nuremberg. The reality here is, they're smearing. I mean, this sounds conspiratorial, but I mean, who's going to call up here and say these type of things? But I have all the documents to prove it. I mean, you know, you could be. There are hearts of towns with you know, pedo gate parties and such like that. What the reality is for my baby is she was kidnapped. The order was set ahead of time. There is a black mark system in place through the fast track system where they will track women. It's just like the revelation in the end times. I was listening to your words in the beginning about two or three witnesses. I've spoken to many people. There's been no contesting. There's been no evidentiary. It works like a criminal court system, you know, but it can't happen that way. I've never seen anything in black and white. I had to walk a tightrope. I could have been locked away. I mean, they'll take civil rights, political activists, attorneys that know about these corrupt judges. They will put them away. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Adam up in Pennsylvania, Adam Ostonsky. He just disappeared in September. He was saying too much, but kid for cash and but it continues as and understanding the eugenics of the system and the social engineering, it just disgusts me. I don't even know what my question is, honestly, but if you've ever heard of this type of insanity, I'm scared for my life. My attorney mapped out she mapped out things, and I'm looking for not horizontal connections. I'm looking for parabolic curves. Like Darby Shaw, she's telling me I can't make statements or affidavits. I mean, I can't have evidentiary hearings. It's all a lie, and I'm in big trouble right now. I was about to just run, but I have to face these criminals. I have to take this to a federal court, and I have to do it where, you know, things are revealed. Documents like the fax forms, where it was done a day ahead of time. All the legal injuries to conceal the fraud. Can you tell me anything about how I could proceed to have a federal jury? I mean, this is only at state level, and my rights. They're trying to hide documents so they can terminate my rights. Expired. What do you know about expired notary, commissioner of notary?
Well, look. I can give you a little bit of advice here and some thoughts on things you might be able to do. Okay. Clearly, they're violating your right of due process. They're silencing you, preventing you from defending yourself. You know, when someone tells you can't write an affidavit, I mean, who the heck is that person? Who told you this, the judge?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So now there's two things you could do, and both of them are going to take time. How long have you been in this issue? How old is your daughter now?
She'll be two in November 19th, so, you know,
so how
things have to take place.
Did they take her at birth? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, and I could visit her at the agencies, but I really couldn't. And they were busy fabricating evidence.
Okay, so you've been in this issue for 2 years now.
Oh, I've been in it for 7 years. They take them all at birth. It's just disgusting. And how could you argue anything?
There's two things you could do. Okay, I'm going to give you the simplest one. And again, both of these are going to take more time. So there's no fast way to move this process along. The first thing you could do, we're about ready. We're hopefully about ready. And I don't want to say this really, you know, dogmatically that we are absolutely ready. I'm going to have a meeting hopefully maybe this week or something. And we may be ready to go back to starting to do habeas corpuses again. And
I got to talk to you.
Put a good affidavit together. Tell the story from beginning to end, but be careful. Look it. Focus in on right and wrong. Don't get lost in some of the things you said I didn't understand. Some of the things, concerning, reports about you and this kind of stuff. You know, it gets too technical. Stay away from the technical stuff. Get to the nuts and the bolts. This is what happened.
What?
And this is my experience. You can even put in there how you felt at the time if you want. Don't expound too much on feelings and stuff, but you want to make a point that you're depressed or distressed or something of that nature. But what you want to do is focus in on as many of the facts as possible from day one to present. And as you go along, you can add to that. But get that story onto a piece of paper first, and just be careful not to get confusing, because, again, some of the things you were talking about, I don't understand. And, you know, it's going to confuse the matter. Here's the point, and this is where everything sits. Due process, jurisdiction. Those are the two things. That's cause to go to any federal court. You can move this whole thing right into the federal court for cause. Okay, but you had to have a really good affidavit.
Yeah.
Now, to move it into the federal court, I'll talk about that in a minute. The easiest way to go, which maybe you should do both, is as soon as we open up with habeas corpuses, you get to fill out the form, get us your affidavit, and we'll get a habeas corpus in, and we'll move it that way. Now, that's not going to necessarily, look, none of that's going to move. Everything that we're doing in the courts is sitting there, okay? We sent papers in this morning, and they're not sending them back. Now, we got this really official-looking document with certain claims and this and that and the other thing, and we're banned for this and blah, blah, blah. It means nothing to us. We just ignore it. We filed more. I don't think they're going to send it. They haven't sent anything back to us. So that writes, that's reams right there. And that's a book. So we know that something, that they're frightened. I believe we got them in a situation where the clerks are afraid to do anything on behalf of the judge. And I wrote a little thing in there, you know, concerning the law, demand to file, so on and so forth. And we put a little thing in there that basically, you know, if the judge wants to remove it, don't you go breaking the law on his behalf. Let him do it. Okay? Just very simple. Because I think that's what's happening. Okay? The judge doesn't want
to. But I have to enter a plea to remove it.
Well, hold on. Let me just make this point. This is an important point I'm making, because I want you to understand the problems that we're having at this moment. But the habeas corpus at some point in time will take its weight and have some power and be able to deal with these people, because they're not responding. So we could do a habeas corpus into that court on behalf of you from the grand jury's perspective of the grand jury, and as the administrators of the grand jury, that's what we're doing that perspective from. And then we can then file it in the court in up here in the federal court. Now, again, that's something you could do, and you know, something we've had a couple of people that actually worked on right away, but only a couple out of 30 plus. And but at some point
really.
In time, all those habeas corpuses are going to have to be dealt with. When we get that critical mass and things start moving, that's a case that needs to be dealt with that we're putting inside our case. Because, again, this is all about subversion. It's all about subversion against we the people, you know, against the government, against the nation, against the Constitution, against we the people. But that's one thing. Going back now to the federal side of things, you could move it into the federal court for cause. The problem is I don't know that you have the knowledge and yet the ability to be able to do it on your own, and is really, you can't hire a lawyer to do it, because they're just going to do it all wrong anyway, you know? So the only thing I could suggest to you on this, on that end, is to study.
Right.
If you really put an intense focus in on what I'm going to tell you now, then you could probably be in a position in 3 to 6 months, maybe, to be able to move it into federal court. But you have to understand certain things, and we can give you a little advice and ideas, and you'd understand what to do, as long as you have the prerequisitional understanding requirements. In other words, you understand the process, you understand how things work, you understand that there are rules of the court, which you really just read through and make some notes, and you'll be able to use that, the rules of the court, against them as much as they'll try to use the rules of the court to push you out. You need to understand how it works. But the point is, here's what you need to do. You may already be doing this, okay? You need to take our constitutional course and our civics course, okay? That's definitely what you need to do to begin with. You also need to take a jurisdictionary course, and that is that's the only one that costs money. We have no control over that. It's written by a lawyer, and I've used it. That's how I got into the courts and understand how to write papers and how things work and understand the paperwork. So you need to take that jurisdictionary course. Now, that jurisdictionary course, unfortunately, costs $249. But it's worth every penny. If you're ever going to have to go into courts and you want to be able to represent yourself, That course is worth every penny and more, okay? Mm-hmm. It will teach you all of the processes. Now, you need to combine that with the knowledge of what you're going to learn in the civics course, which is going to touch, the civics course is going to touch on common law. And you need to let the common law take control over the process that you're going to learn through jurisdictionary. Okay? Now, I use court rules, as long as they're not repugnant, and I'll use them, I'll use them against them all the time to force them to do what they need to do. Okay, so you should read through the federal court rules and see what ammunition is in there. There's lots of stuff in there you can use to kick butt. They try to break their own rules all the time, and then you can move right, well, excuse me, according to rule this, that, or the other thing, you know, and you bring it up, you quote it, and you put it out. But all your response in the federal court wants to be in writing, and you're really pressing towards default. They will default, trust me. If you write your papers right, after you learn all this stuff, and it will give you some advice. Once you learn all the stuff, you can follow the advice then. And you write your papers in such a way, they cannot answer this stuff. And they have nothing. So they're going to default. Now, they may try to answer with some babble, and then they may try to leave this out or leave that out. You got to be really up on top of that. And you take your notes, and everything they didn't answer, they agreed to. And you can use that as the leverage. But what are you going into court for? Your battle is going to be in two places, and it's always the same. I always see it in the same place, jurisdiction and due process. They don't have the jurisdiction, and they never give you the due process. How come they don't have the jurisdiction? They don't have the jurisdictions because they're in jurisdictions unknown. We have no clue on what jurisdiction they're even in. They make it up as they go. So they don't really have the jurisdiction.
Right,
they're not giving you due process. You're not in a court of justice, and so your rights are being violated. So that's why you're going
to
federal
court. But I'd like to raise an issue.
Huh?
Right, I'd like to raise an issue.
Yeah, but let me finish this last part, and then you can raise the issue. But here's the other thing, okay? When you get into the federal court, and this is where it's important to read our memorandums. Our memorandums work on every case in any level, whether you're in a federal court or state court, doesn't matter, okay? It deals with memorandums of law. Okay, it deals with jurisdiction. It deals with due process. It deals with an Article III court. It deals with a court of record. It deals with the common law. You see, all of these things, okay, is something that you have to make sure you get into the federal court. So you're putting the court into a position where they now have to be understand that they are in what's called an Article III court. Okay, and again, these are the things we can kind of feed you by saying, go look at this document here and read that and make it part of your case. Add these memorandums into your case. Just change whatever you have to change inside of it if anything needs to be changed according to your case, and add it to your case. But you have to build your case up to put the federal judge on notice that we are not in a jurisdiction unknown. We're not in a commercial jurisdiction. I'm not giving you a right to make any rulings on this. We're in a court of law. This is under the common law. You don't have to talk about the jury, but in the footnotes. Footnotes are extremely important. And again, studying is the only way you're going to learn this stuff. And, you know, read. If you want to, studying is reading. That's all it is. And, you know, studying is reading and understanding. Stop every sentence. If there's something in there that just you don't get, don't bypass it because you're missing a nugget, most likely. Dig deep till you understand. Ah, that's what that means. Okay, then move to the next step. See, I've discovered a long time ago, if you understand what you're reading and looking at, you'll never forget it. You don't have to remember anything. It'll all come to you because it becomes part of your mind in a sense, and you're really understanding it, and basically you have it. So read these things, get these issues, cover the bases. Matter of fact, maybe we'll do a paper one day and post it up. These are the things that need to be covered in court in order to make it clear to the federal, and this is on federal courts, to make it clear to the judge, this is an Article III court. You can't move this way, you can't move that way because this is where it's at. You see, once you lay that case out that way, that puts that judge on notice. And they always have to, they're pretty bright people. They're evil, but they're pretty bright, too. Mm-hmm. They want to look for a place to hang their hat. And if they can't hang their hat, they're going to push the other side to make a deal or whatever. But remember, I'll tell you what's going to happen. They're going to default. They're going to try to have you thrown out of court. You have to prevent that. That's easy. but they're going to default or they're going to answer just a little bit, not everything. You can then pick back up, get the things that they didn't answer. You can get a default right there, a summary judgment, because they didn't answer certain questions, so therefore they admitted to it, and you can couch that in a way to move towards your judgment. And then what your judgment is another thing. Of course, your judgment, of course, two things your judgment is. I want to be restored, and I want my child back. That's where you're really heading for, okay? But you got homework to do. You've been in this a long time, and it's going to take a while longer. You can accomplish this in 3 to 6 months. You sound pretty bright. You're very articulate. You understand a lot of things. So I don't see any reason why you can't master and understand this. And again, you'll get out as much as you put in. When I wanted to really get into the courts, and I really needed to understand, I got jurisdictionary, I opened it up on a Friday, and I didn't get out of it until the end of the day Sunday. I took the whole course in those Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And now I had everything back as reference, and I put everything in order so I can find anything, and make some notes and stuff, and you put things in order, and now you have a reference book. All of that stuff you learn from jurisdictionary is a reference book on how the process works. How do you open up a case? How do you move a case into the federal court? Now, he doesn't teach you that, but we can show you basically. It's a very simple cover paper to move your court from any other court into a federal court for cause. And then, you have to be very clear on what your cause is. It's got to be a constitutional issue. And, of course, due process and jurisdiction, by all means, is the jurisdiction of the federal court. Okay? So that's the best I can tell you. You got to, all of us, we have to get up and learn this stuff. And by the way, anybody who goes for the jurisdictionary course, hit the button on our website, because it's going to cost you the same no matter how you get to that site. But we get $49 or $50 for every course that's bought there, so that goes into supporting NLA. So do, by all means, use the link on our website to go to jurisdictionary, and then we'll get credited for that, and that'll help us to pay our bills. But go ahead. You wanted to bring something else up.
Yeah, these legal terms are a little foreign to me, so excuse the language deficit. But honestly, you're talking about Article 3 and moving it into a federal court as soon as possible. I need to file some kind of paperwork in order to do that. See, what happens in these family courts is they try to keep it in there to hang their hat, as you had said, but the reality is anywhere they'll do that as well. But
they don't want to let go of you. You're a moneymaker for them.
Yeah, well, I know. They want to close the case for the money. But, yeah, it's been open long enough that they can do it at this point and do it without my knowledge or being summoned to court. But what is it that I need to do besides take these 2-3 courses? I need to have them done in the next week, but I was supposed to appear tomorrow, but there's another high-profile case on, and my attorney should
You're never going to be able to accomplish what I'm talking about in a week. I mean, you have to be really very, very bright and individual and that can really, that maybe has photographic memory or something, to be able to accomplish something
like that
quickly. But what I'm telling you, anybody who's a thinker, anybody who can articulate, and you seem to have both of those qualities. So anyone should be able, with will, desire, and determination. So you have to have that will to accomplish this goal and to accomplish it as quickly as possible. I say to you that you could probably do it in 3 months. I felt very comfortable on my paper writing and my process of the things I was doing. And, of course, you learn all the time, so I keep building. But it took me 3 months to get to that point where I really felt really confident that I was doing what I had to do. Now, you have to learn things as you go along. I mean, you read. You can't never stop reading. Read court cases. There are landmark court cases, the Miranda case is one. Marbury versus Madison is another one. We have a list of them up on our website, and I'm sure you'll find others. And you'll pull these little nuggets out of there. And read our cases, because you're going to pull a lot of stuff out of our cases, you know, a paragraph here, a sentence there. But the memorandums of law, in my opinion, is the most important papers we write, because we refer to those memorandums of law to make it clear. We keep the paper simple. We tell them what what the fact of the matter is concerning the case. This is a common law case. A court, we're opening an Article III court. We might put a footnote or two in there, two or three sentences, or maybe just one on the fact that it's an Article III court, and then we say see memorandum on Article III court, and then we expound on that 6-8 pages, whatever it is, and it makes it clear. There's no wiggle room for a judge in any of this. We cover the common law side. We cover the jurisdiction as on Article III court. We put the judge on notice. We make sure he understands he's a magistrate. No summary judgments here unless we move it to a summary judgment because of a default, or they acquiesced and we move it to a summary judgment at that point, which is appropriate. And so we don't have to go into the trial where we get the jury. But bear in mind, you know, if you cover all of your bases, you do your homework. And we'll give you some help as you're getting ready to do these papers. You know, go see this, read that, use this, that kind of thing. And then you put your case together. Remember, you got to be able to get up there and articulate yourself in the court. You also want to have a presence in that court. That judge has got to be wondering about you. He looks at the paperwork, and you don't have to say much, you know. More often, you can object to things. You give a reason why you're objecting, and I'm going to respond more. I'm going to expound on that more in a paper, because I want to do some homework, Judge, before I, make my whatever it is that you want to conclude there. But you know, you can object in the court. You can make some points. Stand up for your rights. Quote the rules of the court, especially when the other side they try to throw it out. You know. So you want to go through the rules. But that's what you got to do. And you can do it, but it's going to take some time. It's going to take at least 3 months, I would imagine, to really push hard to get it done. You know, and the other thing is this. It sounds like you got to sue your lawyer also.
I'm just going to laugh. But, in their capacity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But
they're guilty. I'll tell you right now, they are in a conspiracy against you. Your lawyer's involved.
Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. And the sad thing is I have to appear in court, and I need to be able to move it into federal court at the time I have to appear in court. But I still have her, and she has she's been appointed. The doctor had ruled me intermittently incompetent. And this has been going on for years, but the judge overruled it, marked me as competent, but appointed my attorney, the one that smells like a dead rat, as a guardian ad litem. And we all know about guardian ad litem, right? In these systems. So she has the power over me. I mean, she already does, as I am a ward of the court, but she has that power over me.
You can have that again. Look at this is some of the things, your challenges. You can get your power back by moving into federal court, because now you got the upper hand. You're the defend. You're the plaintiff. Okay, they're the defendants, and you're going to come out after. Oh, this person's crazy. Oh, this that. That's okay. You know, they got to now prove it, and more than that, they got to answer your affidavit. They got to answer everything you put in your papers. And believe me, if you do it right, I like to overwhelm them with facts. I don't want to expand, you know, get too much, you know, that you put too much information on facts in the sense that you draw out something too long. You don't want to do that. But you do want to list as much facts, as many facts as you can that's damaging to them that they got to respond to. They got to answer. And again, anything they don't answer, you know.
A summary of facts.
And it's not just the paperwork that you're writing in, but it's that affidavit. They got to answer everything in that affidavit, and if they don't, you got them. The other thing is they never like to do affidavits, it seems. You know, they filter an affidavit through the lawyer, you know. My client or whatever, you know, answers through the his lawyer, you know, being the person who's writing this, and then they talk on behalf. Well, that's hearsay. That's secondhand information. That's nothing. That's not a sworn. You know, it doesn't matter that the person told the lawyer that, and then the lawyer comes in and writes on behalf, and he or she makes the statement that this is true and swears to it, and so on and so forth. They're not part of the case, so they don't have an affidavit. Okay. And that destroys their whole case, not having an affidavit. And their answer, again, through the lawyer, again, it's secondhand information. I want that person to say this, that, or the other thing. I want them at the end of it to sign and swear that this is true. That's what I want. And if I don't get that, then they don't have anything. Now, that's a fight in the court because they'll disagree with you. But you can bring that battle, and I think you could win it, again, if you have the ability to push it through, and you got to get some education. It's going to take a few months at least.
Right, but in order to put this into federal court, I need to stamp this affidavit immediately.
I don't know of any way. If you're not prepared to move it into the court, they're going to reject it. They're going to refuse it. They're going to say you don't have a cause because you have to articulate all this in the right way. And there's a cover sheet that you got to use. Now, look, it is true that judges are supposed to take this into consideration. You could take a roll of toilet paper and a pencil and write an affidavit and give it to, and they got to take that. But of course, they won't. And because you don't know the form, the process, they're going to say, you need a lawyer. And you say, I don't want a lawyer because they're not going to represent me properly, and so on and so forth. They're not going to let you. You're not going to get in. They're not going to even accept a court case. Okay. You gotta be able push this way. Well, you see, this is the problem with all of us. I speak to myself first. We all waited too late to learn this stuff. You know, we don't go to learn it until we need it, and then we haven't learned it. So now we gotta learn it, and then we get beat up while we're trying to learn it. But eventually one day you'll turn the tide, and the tables will turn on them, and you'll start beating them up. But again, you have to start somewhere. You might as well start right now. And do what you can for whatever you can, and there's not much you could do. I mean, you can keep battling. You could do a paper of intent to move this into the federal court, and I don't know how that works in the sense of time. This is a family court issue. They may just ignore it and say, you're crazy anyway, and they just ignore it.
Right.
It may not go anywhere, so it's hard to really say how that'll work. I mean, but you could do something with an intent and file that with the federal court and then come up more with a more formal paper that's more accurate, lays out what's necessary,
Midnight.
Right. So thank you so much for your time.
All right. Okay, we're going to stay a little late tonight because we're a long time and I didn't want to lose that call. I think there was a lot there to be learned from that person. So... let's go to our next caller. Let's see. Gerard, you still here? Or did I put you to sleep? Are you talking with a mute mic? I'll hit the next button. Deborah, I think it is. Was that Deborah that just went in there to the queue?
No. Can you hear me?
Yes. First name and state.
Ellen in Washington State.
Okay, Ellen, go right ahead.
Okay, what I have is I bought a piece of property several years ago. Well, in fact, 29, going on 30 years ago. It'll be 30 years ago this fall. And it was just a bare ground except that it had a dug well, and that was it. I improved the land, and as I improved, I kept, adding. I added on a house, and I moved in a mobile home and added an addition on that, and so on and so forth. And then I got married, and while I was married, we decided, we're going to improve the property. We're going to add to it, and... upgraded, kind of. We added on more on the addition and remodeled and put up a partial shop. We did a lot of stuff, okay? Well, then we decided, well, we want to do more. And I had previously owned a business and ruined my credit while I was doing it. And so we wanted to get a loan. We got a loan, but we did it in his name. The property and all structures on it were mine before marriage. So it was my my separate property. And then we wanted to get a loan because we were going to do more. We're happily married. We're doing all this stuff. So I signed because my credit was worse than his. And so I signed a deed of love and trust and signed the property over to him, and we got a loan in his name. And I signed on the thingamajig. They said, no, this isn't because you're getting the loan. This is your permission giving him the right to get this loan. And so we did that. And then 2 years later, we end up in a divorce. Well, the property was awarded to me in the divorce because, basically it started out my property, then it became community property, and then I signed it over, but it was still community property. Well, it wasn't community property before I signed it over. It was mine before the marriage. Anyway, I signed it over to him, then it became community property. And in the divorce, I was awarded the property, but he wasn't allowing me to have the monthly billing statements on this loan that he got. So I was making blind payments, and they accepted the payments, and they sent me a thing and said, okay, we understand you've been awarded the property and all this. This goes back to 2002, and I made the payments, and they acknowledged the payments and everything. And then before the next payment was due, the divorce was final, and they did a non-judicial foreclosure on the property in his name. But the property was mine because I was awarded that in the divorce. And I'm going, whoa.
Now, was any of those papers changed in, the deed and everything in the county record?
No, see, it was his lawyer that was supposed to do that, and it wasn't changed in the county record.
Right. Well,
however,
if his lawyer wasn't paid to do that, then he's not going to do it. And it sounds like he probably didn't pay his lawyer to do that. But nevertheless, I would imagine you could do an affidavit and make this point clear to them that it's
well, okay, now, just a minute. I'm not finished.
Down.
Okay. I'm not finished. Okay. So what happened was they did a foreclosure. They called him in. He wrote a thing saying that, and whatever you call it, saying, no, I don't have any interest in the property. So then they started evicting me. But they had written a letter to me saying that they accepted my payments and they understood that I had gotten the property in the divorce. After they sent the letter, they accepted the payments that I was making. They accepted them, and then they did the foreclosure, the non-judicial foreclosure, and without me knowing what the heck they were doing. And then I start getting all these eviction notices and all kinds of stuff.
Are you selling the property?
Yes, I am.
Do they have a sheriff's eviction in process yet?
Well, will you listen to me? Okay, so from 2002 to October 10th of this year, they've been trying to get me off this property. I hired a lawyer until 2006, and the lawyer kept me in court and kept me in court and kept me paying money. Right. And then he would withdraw, and then he'd get back in, and he would withdraw, and then he'd get back in every time I got served with eviction.
All this is down the wrong road, and there's only a couple things you could do here. The key thing is this: a nonjudicial foreclosure is exactly what it says. They're taking your property without judicial process. So that's an assault upon your right of due process. You can make a federal case out of it. Look at it.
Okay. So, I fired the lawyer because he had my property broken into while I was gone. I went to California because my daughter was in the service and her husband was in Iraq. And they had a newborn baby, and she was working on San Nicolas Island. So I went to California from Washington to take care of the baby, because otherwise she would have to put her someplace, and she didn't want to do that. So I went down there to take care of the baby. While I was gone, the lawyer knew I was gone, and he turned it in and had the whoever was trying to get me out of here had my house was broken into. They broke a window, they broke my coffee tables, and they said, because it was in the wintertime, they said that they saw ice in the windows because of broken pipes. Well, before I left, I had all the pipes flushed out, everything. It was winterized.
Right. Okay.
And I had my friend watching it for me, and they were coming in.
So this was their way to get into your property? Is that what you're saying?
They cut locks. They broke the door. They broke the window in the back. And after they got in,
who was
they?
Who did this?
Bishop and White and Bishop, or Bishop White, and there's been like four or five different attorney firms after me.
Let me explain something. Let's make it simple, okay? Are you still in the property?
Yes.
Okay, you need to get down to the deed.
On October 10th.
You need to get down and make sure that they did not change the deed into anybody else's name, and to make sure that it goes into your name, and you should be able to get the court order to take it down there and work that out. Ask them what it is they want. They should be able to tell
but
you.
But you're not listening to me,
you. I understand what you're saying, but we can solve the problem a lot simpler than you realize. This is a jurisdiction problem. They don't have it. This is a violation of your right of due process. They never gave it to you. That they lose. Let me ask you, this is Washington State, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is Washington State a non-judicial foreclosure state? Do you know that, if
yes.
that is the case?
That's
it is. Okay.
What they did, yes.
Because, but listen, that doesn't mean they're a non-judicial foreclosure state, okay? Look, there are lots of states that are not non-judicial foreclosures, and they do it anyway. New York is not a non-judicial foreclosure state, and they do the non-judicial foreclosures. And I think that's why it takes so long for them to get you out, because they're moving that process along little by little, little by little. Nobody's doing nothing. They move it to the next step. See, what they're going to do eventually is they're going to change the name on the deed. And your husband's name or your name is not going to be on there no more. And you're going to go and say, whoa, how'd that happen? And everything is a step-by-step process, huh?
Is that a list pendants then? Is that what I need to file?
No. What you need to do, and again, you know, it's going to be a little depressing for you because it's going to take time and you have to get educated, okay? You could file a paper with us. We can file a non-judicial foreclosure paper for you. They're ignoring it. There's a chance they may not, but they're ignoring it at this point. It might buy you more time. It might not. I don't know. At some point in time, that will have the clout that it deserves. But until we can get, the process, our court process moving, and start to get some convictions and people, you know, trials going, we're just building cases and keep putting the pressure on them. That's all we're doing. Now, on the other side of that, look at. If you could move this into federal court for cause, you don't have to fight and argue anything. You don't have to.
All right,
just
a minute.
Listen, please listen.
But you haven't heard the whole goddamn thing.
But I don't have to hear it because you only have to deal with one issue. If they don't have jurisdiction and they don't give you due process, you win. You don't even have to tell the rest
okay,
of the story.
They got a summary judgment on October 10th of this year.
That's the way that
the judge ordered me to get a goddamn attorney, and they're nothing but stinking liars, and that's why I have been in court on my own four times and won until the judge told me to get a lawyer. Ordered me to get a lawyer. I got a lawyer and I lost.
Right. Look at, of course, because the whole thing is set against you. The summary judgment is not valid either, okay? It gets back to due process again. They have to have affidavits, and then, of course, the judge has to, there's a whole part of process that's got to go through. There's nothing there. These other side, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, they haven't even done an affidavit even through their lawyer. Which is no affidavit at all. Okay, it's everything they're doing is process. They just move to the next step. Most of it is in secret, and they'll send you a little letter here, a little letter there. Usually, the judge won't sign off on it. The fact that he signed off on it, well, he thinks he's going to get away with it because they call it a quote unquote non-judicial foreclosure state. No such thing as non-judicial foreclosures. It violates your unalienable right, okay, of due process.
Right, I know that.
So let me just finish the point. You can win every case, and I try to make this point. People really have to get this into their heads because they get lost in their stories. Your story is important. That needs to be in an affidavit. But look it, why fight 20 battles when you only have to fight one to win, okay? If they don't have the jurisdiction, and the fact of the matter that they didn't give you due process, they lose. And you know what? They can't go back to get the due process to you because they can't win on the other side of it. That's why they have non-judicial foreclosures. They've created a process to take your property away from you by not having to go through the judicial process because they can't win on the judicial process. And in order for them to try to win on the judicial process, they have to commit fraud. They have to make statements of claims that they cannot make. The fact that you owe them money. You really don't owe them money, ultimately, okay? But there are so many other things here. There are so many other things here. They can't win the battle in a court of justice. So they have to create a scam to take your property. This is going all over America. But it's simple. I go back to the education. You have to have a certain amount of education. You could do it in 3 months if you stick, put your head into it and really work on it. But you can get into federal court and you can win it in federal court.
Okay, I heard that in the last one with her child, and she's losing her child, and you know it.
Yes.
All right, listen to me. I have until November 10th, and lawyer, I keep getting those two words.
Yeah,
confused.
I do, too. I get it mixed up often, too. But
I get those two words confused. The liar and the lawyer, same damn thing. But he told me that I have to file, before November 10th, he told me that I have to file to, he wrote it out for me and charged me a whole bunch of money. It's cost me $10,000 for this damn thing.
It's ridiculous.
Court of Appeals Division 3, and he's called me the defendant with my name in caps. He said that I have to go and file this over in the court over here in the county, in the Superior Court. He told me I have to file this or they're going to move on me and make me get off the property. And I've been looking at it, and I go, my name is all in caps, and
yeah,
he's saying that I have to appeal it to a district court, and the district court isn't going to do a doggone thing different than what the Superior Court and the county court did.
Hold it. What you should do is go through the appellate process. You serve notice of appeal. This could be very simple for you because all you have to do is pretty much almost write a letter, okay? But you put the headings on and stuff, and you serve notice of appeal. Call up the appellate court or visit the appellate court, ask them, how long do you have in order to perfect your case? They, here in New York, I think it was 8 months or 6 months. I think it's 8 months. They give you 8 months to perfect your case, which means once you, now you only have so many days to file a notice of appeal, okay? So you better do it within the amount of time. Here in New York, it's 30 days.
I'm doing it tomorrow if that's what you're telling me I need to do.
Just listen. Just listen very carefully. I'm trying to help you. What you need to do is call up the appellate court, find out how much time you get to perfect the case. Perfecting the case means from the time you file that notice of appeal, okay, till the time that you actually file your papers in the appellate court. Here in New York, we get 8 months. Maybe you'll have 6 months. That's a lot of time. Okay? If it's 6 months, now you just put yourself into a comfortable position. They can't kick you out. You're going through the appellate process, and now you work to educate yourself and get into the federal court before that expires. Don't even bother going to the appeal because you're going to lose there anyway. That whole thing is system is rigged. Okay?
I know. That's why I didn't file it.
So now you've got 6 months to educate yourself. Get educated, okay? Get the civics course. It's free right here online. Get your constitutional course free here right online. Read our papers. Everything's free. Your membership is free. Just get educated. Hold on. NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Now, the only course that you're going to have to pay for, and you have to get it, is what's called the jurisdictionary course. That jurisdictionary course teaches you exactly how to write papers, how to file papers, what papers are necessary. It talks to you about the index number you're going to need. You're going to need an RJI. In the federal court, you don't get that, but you get a number. You got to learn about summonses and how that process works and the paper that you have to put on top
of
the paperwork.
Yeah, I know. I understand all that because I've done it. I've been in court and won.
Okay.
Every time until I hired an attorney because I go online and I search this stuff out. I get the law. I use it on them and tell them this is where what the law said, and this is why this has to be done. And they go, okay, well, we can't do anything.
I'm going to tell you what you need to do. I already told you what you had to do with the appeal. Do that right away. You know you got to do that paperwork. That'll give you 6 months. Okay, you go do your education and then come talk to us in 3 months. Because at that point in time, as long as you've educated yourself, I can give you some thoughts and some ideas and point out a paper and give you some pointers, and then you should be able to pull it together and write it yourself and get it in. Remember, it's important that you learn to do this so that you go in as your own person. You're in pro se or in your own person, in pro per, okay? And when you go in, I'm telling you right now, if you can write papers that intimidate, that make it clear and concise and precise on what you're expecting of that court on the federal level, that judge is going to step back and look. He understands. That's the judge that understands. I think they're the only educated judges, to be honest with you. I don't know that any of these other judges have any education.
Well, is that why maybe I won? Because I'm not going in as the straw man. I'm going in and I say my name is... And I tell them my name. I don't spell it out, you know.
Right,
and
but
I'm
look, don't get lost in that. Listen to me. Listen, I've been in that road, and I understand it clearly. I understand the game. But listen, once you start exercising that, you're empowering them. Because you're giving them power, and you're acknowledging that they have power. You're acknowledging that by that they're given authority and that they can continue. I say no. I don't even go there. My cases, in a roundabout way, without getting into the man on the land stuff, lets them know all of that is fraud and I'll have no part of it. When they bring their fraud into the court, I'm going after that for fraud. When a judge makes a decision on the case and it's way outside the boundaries of what he could possibly have done because the facts go a different direction, you give him a writ of error and you go after him for fraud on the case. Okay?
Okay, so the time before when I was in the court, and I was in on pro se, I was representing myself, and I had the laws. I went online and did the UCCs and the RCWs and all that. I got that.
But look,
I went in there, but what my mistake was, Now listen to this, and this might be something for you to look at. I went in there, and I had some notes that I had taken while I was in California because my house got broken into, and I had my friend watching my house, and she saw that there was someone here because they were making it look like it was lived in. And she came in, they had broken in, and this construction worker said that it had been taken over and that they were upgrading it and they were getting it ready to either sell or
okay,
rent
you,
out.
Okay, get to the point, though, because we have other people.
Okay,
and,
the
and,
point
and I do
is...
I do want to help you, but go
the
ahead.
The point is, I... Well... You've got other things to do, I guess. They gave the property back. They broke in. They did all this stuff, said it belonged to them. But on the notes that I took while I was in California, I wrote on the notes that the attorney, and I named him on my notes, that he was the only one that knew I was gone other than my friend who was watching the place and my sister, of course. But to who to contact, because you can't see my property
right
off the road. You can't see
the
window.
But what does that have to do
with okay, so what you? Happened was the judge got pissed, mad, excuse my language, mad, because on my notes, I wrote Matt Sanger was the only one that knew I was gone. The next time I went in court, he turned on me quicker than crap, and he says, Matt Sanger is a good lawyer. And I said, well, yeah, I don't understand. What does... And that's when he told me to get a lawyer. Because up until then, I had won every one until I fingered a dirty lawyer. The lawyer
okay.
was the only one that knew
right,
that my property
look,
was
no,
vacant.
I understand. But listen, this is what you got to do. You got to get rid of everything else around you, and for the next 3 months, focus in on learning. That's what you got to do. You got 6 months. You can play the court for 6 months. You want to move into the federal court before that 6 months is up. So it may take you
okay,
4 or 5
so
months. Once you get that education, you'll know the right questions at that point to start asking. And then I can give you some more information.
Okay, so if I go to your website, it's
National Liberty Alliance.org. Right.
Okay.
Take the free courses. Okay, you'll see up on top two free courses, and then take the jurisdictionary course, which again, that's one you got to pay for. We didn't write that.
Yeah,
we don't control
I understand.
That,
so. I already paid $97 to get into this, and I thought it was yourlaw.org.
To get into what?
Talking to you.
What did you pay $97 for?
I signed up for yourlaw.org. I went to their website.
We have nothing to do with that. That's not us.
Well, that's where I went. That's what I signed up for, yourlaw.org. And on their website, it's yourlaw.org. And I signed up for that for $97. And on that website, it said that you have this call at this time on this day. That's why I called. I thought it was
right
through what I had already
well,
paid
yeah,
for.
Well, yeah, that has nothing to do with us whatsoever. You know, we're free for everything we do. I mean, we do ask for donations for, you know, when we do help people.
Well,
with
I would donate. I don't have
yeah
a problem.
We
I'm
on
disability.
We don't charge for anything. And whatever that site, we have no part of that site. I have no clue what they're doing.
How did I get that then?
But let me ask you,
yourlaw.org,
is that what it says? Y-O-U?
Y-O-U-A-R-E,
law,
L-A-W.org. I signed up for that for $97, and then it was supposed to do what you're doing for me. only that they would supply me paperwork forms.
Yeah.
That
right, let me just ask
forms.
You one more time, because I think I heard you, but let me just make sure I got this, because I'm going to go look at this site. YOURELAW, youarelaw.org. Is that what it is?
That's correct. That's where okay. That's where I got your number.
$97 came nothing. It has nothing to do with us. We don't charge money for anything. I have no idea what you were signing up to them for. They are not us. We have no affiliation.
I signed up and thinking it was them because it's on YouTube also. If that's where I first saw it, because it said something about I just brought it up. Winning any, it says URLaw.org in big blue letters, and then it says winning any court appearance and foreclosure, a new perspective. Excuse me, I'm just getting over pneumonia. And then
all right,
the
well,
bottom,
look, it has not.
At the bottom, listen.
No,
listen,
but I got other people here. We're way past our time. We
at the
down
bottom,
at
it says Trinity Freedom Ministries, Freedom Trinity?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right
Freedom
now.
Ministries.
I see it.
Okay.
Right, I see the thing, you know, the website right now. We have no affiliation with them, so I don't know. Whatever you did there has nothing to
that's
do with us.
That's where
but,
I got it.
But you have found. But listen, you have found us anyway. And we'll try to help you. And I've already told
okay,
you what you
I
need
wanna
to do.
Okay, I want
to
make sure
I
that I have
you.
I have you. Your NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Correct.
And what is your name?
John Duresh.
John?
Duresh. And, you know, anybody could talk to me anytime on these Monday night meetings. This is why we have a Monday night meeting. It's an open forum. You got direct access to the founders of this you know, organization. That's Gerard.
Okay, so you think I
and
should go
you have
go
direct
ahead.
Access to all of the national leaders and the state leaders and the coordinators and whatever help committees and everything, and nobody gets charged for anything. You know, freely we have been given, freely we give back. And that's how you have
okay.
to look at things, too.
I'm going to do what I can to get my money back from them then, because that's BS, because this is that's where I got your number, is on that website. And so you're saying that I should go ahead and file this appellate thing, even though it's in my the capital?
Yeah, don't worry about it. That's all fraud. Look, let them do what they want on the fraud. You'll deal with that later in memorandums and make it clear on where you're at. And you don't let them bring it up at that point. They're never going to bring it up, so why should you? You got to ignore it and move the things the right way, you know, forward into the common law process. And whatever they do to try to defraud you more at some point, they can't bring it up, and they're not going to. So why even fight that battle? Win it on the merits of the case. They don't have due process. They haven't given you due process. They have no jurisdiction. Case over. I want everything back. You have to restore me to my original state of being before you people came and started destroying my life. But with that, I got to move to the next person. We're way over time.
Okay, I'm sorry to keep you for so long. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, Jen. Yeah,
John, it's already 12:30.
Yeah, you're right. We'll have to put it off till next week. So, all right. Sorry, there was a few other people in the Q&A. But Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And again, we're here every Monday, 9 p.m. till midnight. And next time, I don't want to get too deep into the details of a case. I know people think that we have to know all the details. We just have to know the basic idea, because it's almost always the same thing. Due process and jurisdiction. Matter of fact, it's always the same thing. Not almost always. I haven't seen anything yet that isn't that. That's the problem. You see, if we're getting due process in a proper jurisdiction, which is a court of law and a court of justice, you're going to get justice in a court of justice, and you'll get your opportunity to speak, and all of this fraud wouldn't have no opportunity to beat you up and take you down and do whatever it is that it does to you, lose your property and so on, or your children. So it's always the same thing. Okay, thanks for everyone for coming. And remember, this Sheriff's Project is very important. Everybody keep an eye on it and try to participate. Get a hold of Jan if you want to help us with the phone calls. And again, everybody should be able to make a couple of phone calls a week and participate, you know, one way or another. Okay, good night. Thank you.